AM 1320 Sacramento's Left Channel invites you to the 5th Annual Voters Education and Candidates Forum 2006 at the Radisson on Saturday, October 7th from 1 p.m. to 5:30. This free event presented by the Asian Pacific Islander American Public Affairs Association is your opportunity to hear candidates running for office, including a debate between California Lieutenant Governor hopefuls John Garamendi and Tom McClintock. Also expect a lively debate on the downtown sports arena issue between supporters including Daryl Steinberg and foes like Assemblymember Dave Jones.
You can also win one of two $1,000 cash raffle prizes for taking a day off from work to vote.
Be an informed voter. Join 1,000 other interested citizens at this year's Voter Education and Candidates Forum 2006 at the Radisson on Saturday, October 7th from 1 to 5:30 p.m. More information is at apapa.org. That address again is apapa.org.
Listening to AM 1320 KCTC, Sacramento's Left Channel. Left Channel. And streaming live at 1320leftchannel.com.
CBS News, I'm Lou Malieno. Dead little girl shot in the head execution style. It doesn't get much more horrific than that. And now the question in rural Lancaster County, Pennsylvania this evening. What could have happened 20 years ago that would so drive a man to do something so horrific? KYW reporter Tony Hansen says the drama unfolded at a little one-room schoolhouse in Pennsylvania's Amish country.
According to state police, the gunman went in there this morning armed with a handgun and a shotgun, went into the school, let the boys go, targeted the girls. They were bound with wire and flex cuffs, plastic handcuffs. And then as state police arrived on the scene and closed in, they were trying to make contact with the suspect inside. They heard gunfire. All of the females inside shot, apparently, an attempt at execution-style slangs on every one of the children, the dead and the injured, many of them shot in the head.
The gunman told his wife it was revenge for something 20 years ago. A family spokesman read a letter from the gunman's wife.
Our hearts are broken, our lives are shattered, and we grieve for the innocence and lives that were lost today.
She asked for prayers and said the man who did this wasn't the man she knew. Leadership on Capitol Hill is putting a lot of distance between it and former Congressman Mark Foley, House Speaker Dennis Hastert.
Anyone who had knowledge of these instant messages should have turned them over to authorities immediately so that kids could be protected.
But CBS News correspondent Bob Foss says that's not cutting it for Democrats.
Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi is demanding that top House Republicans be investigated and questioned under oath. She says parents across America have a right to know, quote, how could Republican leaders choose partisan politics over protecting children? And the only Democrat on the three-member panel that oversees House pages is furious, too. He says Republicans knew about suspicious emails from Congressman Foley last year and never told him.
It was the revelation of intimate emails from Foley to teen pages that led to his resignation and now an ongoing investigation. Not since a lot of the country was shoveling snow, says CBS News correspondent Kevin McCormick, has the price of gasoline been this low?
There's more relief at the pump for many of us. The government says the price of gas has now fallen to its lowest level since February. On average, we're paying about $2.31 a gallon. That's nearly 7 cents less than last week and more than 60 cents lower than a year ago.
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll pop star George Michael, the poster child for excess, has been found again. CBS News correspondent Vicki Barker.
Oh, no. Not again.
George Michael, there he is again, leading with that story.
For the fourth time in 8 months, George Michael and his car are in the news. This time, London police reportedly found him slumped behind the wheel at a traffic light. He was arrested for possession of a small amount of cannabis. His live-in partner will say only that Michael has nothing to say. Vicki Barker, CBS News, London.
Heavy trading, the Dow down 9, the Nasdaq down 20. This is CBS News.
The world changes. The economy changes. Your life changes. And as they do, there's something that doesn't change. The commitment we at UBS feel toward each client. A commitment to offer reviews of your portfolio, to assess your financial goals, and to provide solutions that help you manage all the changes. Wealth management from UBS. In a changing world, an unchanging promise we call you and us. Member SIPC.
Some people think all insurance is the same. They buy the least expensive they can find, and then they have an insurance claim. That's when they learn the hard way that not all insurance companies treat you the same. If being treated fairly and paid quickly are important to you when you or your business has a loss, you want Chubb. When you insure with Chubb, you're buying real insurance. So insure with the best. Insure with Chubb. To learn more, go to Chubb.com.
This is something you'll never get drivers to agree on. Who has the worst roads? In Los Angeles, Vita Sofronica says he has proof.
Nationally, rough roads cost the average driver $383 in maintenance costs each year. In Los Angeles, bumps and potholes citywide are costing drivers nearly twice that amount, $693, according to a report released by the Road Improvement Project, a Washington, D.C.-based nonprofit group. That ranks Los Angeles second worst in the country, right behind only San Jose. This driver blames trucks.
There's a lot of bumps. There's a lot of traffic on the big roads in this place. There's a lot of bumps and holes in the roads.
L.A. officials do admit to a lack of money for street repair over decades is the real problem. The city has about 6,500 miles of streets.
ATMs are bolted down and they're heavy. But at the Bank of America branch in Mesa, Arizona, the thieves knew this. That's why they stole a forklift to rip it up. I'm Lou Milligano, CBSD.
I'd like to start.
Hey, listen up. What about your future? Are you unhappy with your current job? Want to make great money and get the promotion you deserve? Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to sackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's sackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, sackjobs.com is a click away. At sackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
Live from our studios in New York City, this is the Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
There's no need to fear. Underdog is here.
Welcome to the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. It is Monday, the 2nd of October, 2006. Damage control.
Congressman Foley resigned, and I'm glad he did. If he had not, I would have demanded his expulsion from the House of Representatives.
That's House Speaker Dennis Hastert at a news conference earlier today playing outraged. Can you feel the outrage? Can you? Is it yours or is it his? Republican Congressman Mark Foley of Florida did resign on Friday, but we're getting more and more alarming details, seemingly by the hour, about this growing scandal. It looks like it could have even bigger implications than we know about thus far. We'll give you all the updates in just a moment. Also on the show this hour, when you get into a very public, very embarrassing spat of trouble, you might want to try this excuse. It's an underbelly tactic I never thought I would have to explain, but apparently it is becoming very popular among all sorts of different types of conservatives. Plus, how much it costs, how much it takes to get rid of one single pigeon. It's all coming up this hour. But first, a quick update on a few of today's top headlines. As I said, it is day four of the Mark Foley scandal. See what happens when I take the day off? Take one day off. Still more information emerging about Mark Foley's behavior toward underage congressional pages and former pages, as well as what appears to be a multi-year cover-up by the Republican leadership in Congress. ABC News has been the driving force behind this story. Initially, after ABC broke the news on Thursday night, the top Republican on Capitol Hill, Speaker of the House Denny Hastert, said that he had only heard about the story last week. Then he admitted that, okay, maybe he was told about it last spring. We found out this weekend that actually the Republican leadership, including aides in the Speaker's office, definitely knew about it last year. And then last night, ABC interviewed a former congressional page who said that when he was a page, Republican staffers in the House clerk's office, Republican employees on Capitol Hill, warned his whole class of congressional pages about getting too friendly with creepy Mark Foley.
It was a slight cautionary statement, you know, don't get too wrapped up in him and him being nice to you and all that kind of stuff, you know.
Okay, so when was that kid in Congress? When was that warning? The kid's name is Matthew Loridich. He was on ABC News last night. When was he a congressional page? 5 years ago. He was the class of 2001. Republicans who worked in Congress knew enough about Mark Foley to warn congressional pages away from him 5 years ago. But only if you were lucky enough to be a Republican congressional page. Pages, these teenage interns, report to either Republican or Democratic supervisors, depending on which party their member of Congress is. Only the Republican staffers in the page program warned their pages. they left the Democratic pages to fend for themselves, without much success, as it turns out. If you want to read the utterly pathetic and vile Mark Foley instant messages and emails, you will not thank me when you see that we've posted links to them at mattoonline.com today. You can see what exactly it was that Denny Hastert, the Speaker of the House, third in line for the presidency, what he thought was just overly friendly and not sexual in nature. Right, because, you know, 52-year-old guys are always sending emails to 16-year-old boys telling them how hot their 16-year-old friends are, asking for their photos and telling them how much they work out. It's just overly friendly. And those are just the emails. The instant messages are... Before I read the instant messages, I was absolutely committed to reading them on the air tonight. So people know exactly what we're talking about. I was all annoyed and all self-righteous about the fact that nobody would talk boldly about what was in the instant messages on TV when this was being discussed. Here was Brian Ross from ABC last night.
ABC News has obtained internet messages sent by Foley to three different pages after that warning. Two of them were sent to pages in the 2001-2002 class with sexually explicit messages, most too graphic to be broadcast, from Foley, who used the screen name MAF54.
Most too graphic to be broadcast, and they show big disembodied hands typing that are supposed to look creepy. And I was like, why won't they just say them? I'll say them! Well, I read the messages myself then, and frankly, I personally am not capable of putting this stuff on the air, even if the FCC wouldn't have my head for doing so. But we have linked to it at mattoonline.com. Suffice to say, the man is very clearly asking these kids to have sex with him, asking them to, quote, fool around, making reference to having in the past met up with at least one of them in person, and is clearly having the instant message equivalent of phone sex with one of these kids in one of these instant message transcripts in very, very graphic detail. The reaction of the White House?
I hate to tell you, but it's not always pretty up there on Capitol Hill, and there have been other scandals, as you know, that have been more than simply naughty emails.
Tony Snow, White House press spokesman, speaking this morning on CNN. Naughty emails. And oh lordy, look at the time. Or at least look at the date. It is the first Monday in October, which means the Supreme Court is back in business. Here's ABC's Pam Coulter.
Court watchers believe this could be a barn burner of a term. With moderate Sandra Day O'Connor gone, a lot of attention will be focused on her successor, conservative Samuel Alito, and on Anthony Kennedy in his 19th year on the court to see if he moves into her critical swing seat.
Ah, yes, the Supreme Court, our most august legal institution, handling matters of life, death, the Republic, our Constitution, our national honor. And sometimes stuff about the 1983 hit Kiss record, Lick It Up. Vinnie Vincent, the guitarist from Kiss, lost his appeal today at the Supremes when they declined to review a lower court's dismissal of Vinnie's complaint that he was owed royalties from Lick It Up. Adding insult to injury, the process of getting Vinnie's appeal all the way up to the Supremes, where it was rejected, also resulted in us learning Vinnie Vincent's real name, Vinnie Cusano. Yeah. The Supremes today also refused to hear a libel suit from activist C. Dolores Tucker, who was upset with a Tupac song that rhymed her last name, Tucker, with something that rhymes with Tucker. Ms. Tucker claimed that the rhyme caused she and her husband to suffer a, quote, loss of consortium. They lost some of their consortium because of the whole Tucker rhymes with something that rhymes with Tucker thing. And, by the way, it's also still illegal to buy things shaped like genitals in Texas. Big day in Washington at our most august legal institution. That's some of the news creeping me out today. But for other news, here's Kent Jones.
Thanks, Rachel. The Census Bureau announced that the population of the United States of America will reach 300 million sometime in October. However, due to the ongoing drama about immigration, a spokesman said there will be no official celebration like President Lyndon Johnson organized in 1967 when the population hit 200 million. Just to repeat that, La Oficina del Censo anunció que la población de los Estados Unidos de América alcanzará 300 millones alguna vez en octubre. Lo siento acerca de mi español malo. Muy malo, muy malo. Perdóname, amigos. Gracias. In England, a new service launches today that offers customers this anti-theft device. When someone tries to steal your cell phone, it screams.
Hmm.
It's for you. Later on Cat Jones Now, Fox News Channel turns 10 years old. That's not really news, but then neither is Fox News Channel, Rachel.
Thank you very much, Kent. Wow, is this not the most disturbing opening of the show ever?
it's a little Monday-ish.
Yeah. Well, from Mark Foley to Dennis Hastert to the whole, just naughty emails to the actually reading them and then kiss, lick it up, and then, lady screaming.
I played some screaming, and it's just, wake up, people.
Plus, there's Lou Dobbs on the TV. Oh, my God. This is over. 15 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with something even creepier, even weirder, and substantially more disappointing that I heard from a Democratic congressman when I called him today about the Mark Foley scandal. You will not believe what this Democrat told me. Ah, it's coming up.
The Rachel Maddow Show.
I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man. New has come to light.
On Air America Radio.
This aggression will not stand, man. La,
la, la, la. A liberal dose of the truth.
About gas prices. It's good that it costs a lot, and not just because the sales tax will help pay for our twice-a-year governor elections. It's also good if it makes you think of walking the 3 blocks from your house to Del Taco instead of taking the Land Cruiser. Gasoline costs a lot because we have to find it, bribe or kill the people who live on top of it. Extract it, refine it, ship it, and pump it. You'll pay $2 a gallon, and you'll like it because you know what the alternative is. Riding on the bus with poor people. New rule. Call things what they are. If your morning coffee contains crushed ice, whipped cream, and caramel, it's a milkshake.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel, and Freedom from War invite you to take part in a week of education and entertainment. The first annual Week of Peace is Sunday, October 1st through Saturday, October 7th. The week includes daily events, including a Peace Awards dinner, the screening of the extraordinary film Beyond Treason, a panel discussion on peace featuring congressional candidates, a jazz mixer, and more. The Week of Peace is a unique opportunity to explore with others the realization of a world of nonviolence, peace, and social justice. For more information, log on to freedomfromwar.org or go to the events page at 1320leftchannel.com. Find out how you can purchase a passport to all of the events with your $50 donation going to your favorite peace organization. So join AM 1320 Sacramento's Left Channel and Freedom From War and stand up for peace by taking part in Peace Week, October 1st through October 7th.
Now, in the Air America Anchor Chair, the host of the Rachel Maddow Show, Rachel Maddow.
Welcome back. Happy Monday. It is 20 minutes past the hour. This is the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. Thanks for being with us. So everybody has been speculating as to whether Democrats can win the 15 House seats they need in order to take control of Congress this November. And at this point, it is starting to seem like the Democrats just have to wait it out until that many Republican congressmen are in prison and they'll be able to walk right into it. First, you will recall, there was Duke Cunningham.
The trust of my friends and family.
Yeah, Duke Cunningham, he's in prison already. Bob Ney is on his way to prison due to be sentenced in a couple of weeks. You know, I might actually try to go to Washington for his sentencing so I can holler at him in person. Hey, I'm the cross-dressing lesbian you sent out those fundraising letters about. Have fun in the pokey. I'm gay, but not a felon. Bob! Anyway, so Duke Cunningham in prison, Bob Ney on his way to prison, Tom DeLay on trial, and now Mark Foley. With this congressional page lech scandal that is getting creepier by the hour with all these continuing revelations, George Stephanopoulos said on ABC yesterday that, quote, this is a Category 3 political hurricane that is picking up steam. And I think Stephanopoulos is right. The country is, of course, united in thinking that Mark Foley is and was a creep. That is settled. That is not a point of debate, folks. You don't settle anything by saying, wow, this was bad behavior. That's kind of understood across the board. The point of debate now is why and how this guy was understood to be preying on congressional pages, to be behaving inappropriately toward them for years, while nothing was done to actually stop him from doing it, or to even fully investigate if he was taking it any further than what had been seen in those emails. Here was Melanie Sloan, whose group, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, CREW. Melanie Sloan, her group apparently gave the Foley emails to the FBI way back in July.
Their response was utterly inadequate. I mean, not only did they not protect this particular page, but the problem was then Mr. Foley was out there, potentially a sexual predator, left to prey on other pages who remained unprotected because they took no action.
Melanie Sloan from CREW talking about the reaction of the Republican leadership. And, you know, honestly, the cover-up is as big a deal here as the crime. And the cover-up is part of a pattern. And if you cannot see the bigger political pattern here, you need to get yourself a political eye exam because it's very plain. It is one thing to have a bunch of criminals and cretins representing your party in Congress. It's another thing to think that's okay, that that's a just fine order of business. They knew enough about Mark Foley to warn just the Republican pages about him 5 years ago. Then last year, when they had a full-on complaint from a page and his parents, they didn't call the police when they first heard of the inappropriate emails from this 52-year-old congressman to a 16-year-old. They didn't even contact the ethics committee. They contacted Tom Reynolds. Who's Tom Reynolds? He's the Republican congressman in charge of Republican re-election efforts this fall, because clearly it was a political crisis, not a crisis where anyone might be actually in danger. Their investigation at that point into whether Foley was behaving inappropriately was to ask him, hey, you weren't, like, molesting anyone or anything, were you? No? Okay, cool. You're still going to be the co-chair of the Missing and Exploited Children's Caucus, right? Okay, cool. That was their investigation. Today I called one of the members of Congress who has been at the forefront of trying to stop child sex predation online. Bart Stupak of Michigan is his name. He's the ranking Democrat for Oversight and Investigations on the Commerce Committee. Here's what Congressman Bart Stupak, Democrat, had to say about Foley and the leadership in Congress.
You know, when it first broke, some of us were talking that night, and having founded the Law Enforcement Caucus and been involved in this hearings for last year, the sexual predator, online pornography, all this. It's just really a sad day for the House as an institution, because every one of the members, myself included, now are sort of tainted because of this. And it's just, you know, all the work I've done in the last year to bring forth what goes on online, we tell the parents, look, you're the best defense. We always tell your kids not to talk to strangers. They go online. They think because they're on a computer there's this anonymity, and that's not really true. And they have a way of grooming these children. That's what experts call it, grooming. And grooming is basically when a predator gains the child's trust by showering him or her with compliments or getting to know them better or giving them little gifts and that. And you see it happening right underneath our nose. The leadership knows about it and do nothing. And it's just a sad day, and I think it hurts the whole institution and every member. And that's why I think we're upset and outraged at leadership that they did nothing.
Congressman Bart Stupak of Michigan talking about the Mark Foley scandals. Spoke with him earlier this afternoon, and I agree with him there, obviously. But guess what else Congressman Stupak had to say about this scandal? Now, this is a Democrat today talking to me one-on-one on the phone this afternoon. And I asked him what the congressional leadership should have done when they learned about Mark Foley's contact with congressional pages.
Well, to actually do a full investigation, it'd be like, look, you know, I don't mean this disrespectful, but, you know, I've been on the Hill for 14 years, and we all know Mark Foley has a different lifestyle than most of us. And when this should have set off all kinds of alarms.
Hello? This is the first surefire sign to me that the Democrats did not necessarily appreciate what they are dealing with here. Are you kidding me? This guy kept pressing it with me, too.
But if you know the person has a little different lifestyle, you know that you warn the pages when they come in that don't get too friendly with this guy, and that's been going on for a few years, as you indicated, about 4 or 5 years. There's so much more that they should have done an investigation.
Okay. This is the guy who the Democratic Campaign Committee called my office about and offered to my show to give a Democratic response to the Mark Foley scandal. And his take on it was, well, you know, the guy's gay. I about blew my freaking head off when I talked to this Stupak congressman guy this afternoon. Here's a bit more tape from that discussion.
I mean, surely, had these been female congressional pages, I mean, surely the fact that the congressman was straight wouldn't have mattered. You know, I mean...
Well, I don't know. I mean, let's say the congressman's straight, and let's say it was from female employees.
Yeah.
We've had, you know, former members... have sexual relations with female pages?
Ah, right! My point exactly. This is not about the guy being gay, big guy. This is about lechery. I was stupefied to find out this afternoon that this was Democratic Congressman Bart Stupak's take on this issue. This is who the Democratic Campaign Committee is sending out to talk about this thing. Their takeaway, the message, is, oh, he's gay. Are you freaking kidding me? Democrats, let me hand you your talking points on this. Duke Cunningham went to prison for taking more bribes than any other member of Congress ever, taking those bribes from lobbyists. Who did the Republicans pick to replace him when he went to jail? A lobbyist. Bob Ney pled guilty to selling his office, to selling his vote, but they have not made him resign from Congress. They're letting him stay in office. Tom DeLay gets indicted for laundering corporate money in Republican campaigns. He flies to his indictment on R.J. Reynolds' corporate jet. Now Mark Foley, left as chair of the Exploited Children's Caucus. There is a problem with the Republican Party on corruption and lawbreaking and arrogance. Those are your talking points, Democrats. And if you want to make this about Mark Foley being gay, then I am moving to Canada.
Which side do you dress?
6329.
This is an AM 1320 Left Channel Action Calendar. The film company Shiny Object, in conjunction with Fools Foundation Art Gallery at 19th and K Streets in Sacramento, presents an ongoing weekly series of film screenings of independent films, documentaries, and some LGBT interest titles on Friday nights at 7 p.m. Coming Friday, October 13th, Independent America, The Two-Lane Search for Mom and Pop. This film uncovers the growing opposition to big box retail across the U.S. and the often desperate fight being waged by independent retailers to stay alive. Award-winning journalists and filmmakers Hanson Hossein and Heather Hughes travel through 32 states looking for an American unchained by corporate retail and find individuals banding together to preserve not only their livelihoods but also the life of their communities. Independent America, The Two-Lane Search for Mom and Pop, on Friday, October 13th at 7 p.m. at the Fools Foundation Art Gallery, 19th and K Streets. Admission is $5. More information is on the events page at 1320leftchannel.com.
I wanted it all. Intelligence, great looks, physical strength, inner beauty, even social consciousness. Friends said that I wanted too much, but I wouldn't settle. And now, I have it all.
This woman is talking about her Renewal by Anderson replacement windows from Hall's Window Center. If it looks better, lasts longer, and outperforms the competition, it's gotta be Anderson. The only windows and doors to receive Green Seal certification for energy efficiency and environmentally friendly manufacturing. Now you too can have it all. For a limited time, get 7 Renewal by Anderson windows and 1 Anderson PermaShield patio door from Hall's Window Center for just $69.95. Left Channel listeners save an extra $150. Go to HallsWindowCenter.com. Click on the green seal for your coupon. Visit Hall's Window Center today on Business Park Drive in Sacramento and now in Roseville on Roseville Parkway next to BJ's. Call 1-800-76-HALLS. Smud financing available. Some restrictions apply. Offer ends September 30th.
This is an AM 1320 Left Channel Action Calendar. You can support the Sacramento Housing Alliance and enjoy a great evening of music and humor featuring Nashville's Ansi McLean and the Trailer Park Troubadours on Sunday, October 8th at 7 p.m. at Sacramento's Crest Theater. Ansi McLean is a songwriter, storyteller, and entertainer who sings about his life in an American trailer park with his band, the Trailer Park Troubadours, a skillful assortment of musicians who play in the rootsy rock and roll tradition of their hardworking blue-collar forefathers.
Talk made me love you. The Prozac made me stay.
This concert is a fundraiser for the Sacramento Housing Alliance, a broad coalition of over 65 organizations. Their mission is to promote decent, affordable housing and enhanced opportunities for lower-income households through advocacy and education. Tickets are $20 and are available at the Crest Theater box office or at the Crest website. Sponsorship tickets for the VIP reception can be bought directly from SHA.
My guest tonight, a religious scholar and author of the book No God But God, also an analyst for CBS News. Please welcome back to the show, Reza Aslan. You know, the last time we spoke, you were very hopeful about the moderate elements being empowered in the Middle East and beginning to gain a little bit more of a foothold. After this Israeli-Hezbollah conflict, all bets off?
I think this war was a real disaster for a lot of people. Most especially, it was a disaster for the United States. The problem was that from the very beginning, we treated this regional conflict as a proxy war. In fact, as a dress rehearsal to a possible bombing of Iran. The idea was that if we could just take out Hezbollah, then we'll defang Iran in some way. So now Iran is just sort of sitting back, a little bit cocky, a little bit comfortable, and you can forget about nuclear negotiations at this point.
The president spoke after the conflict and said Hezbollah lost.
You're right.
AM 1320.
Show on Air America Radio. We'll turn this car right around.
Welcome back. It is 34 minutes past the hour. This is the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for sticking with me through my little tantrum in the last segment. I was so mad at that guy. I didn't call you to fight, bucko. You should have warned me I was going to need to. Anyway, come coming up in just a moment on the Underbelly, I will tell you Capitol Hill, and actually conservatives coast to coast, their new favorite excuse when things go horribly, horribly wrong. It's apparently the new political campaign tactic that's being given out as advice to all sorts of conservatives, even those outside the Beltway. It's an all-new drunken Underbelly tactic, and that's coming up. But first, the drunk prospector
Eureka!
Leads us to pan for gold among today's other top headlines. And we will start now, as we do every day here on The Rachel Maddow Show, with news from Iraq and life during wartime. More mass kidnappings in Baghdad. Yesterday, armed men went into a food processing factory in Baghdad. They grabbed 26 workers. They forced them into a refrigerated van that was used for carrying meat. A Sunni political party released a statement saying all the kidnapped workers were Sunnis. Four of them are believed to have escaped and been injured in the process of escaping. The fate of the other 22 kidnapping victims is still unknown. That was yesterday. Then another mass kidnapping today. Here's Lee Keith reporting for the Associated Press.
Gunmen burst into computer stores near Baghdad's Technical University and snatched 14 shop employees. This was in the middle of downtown Baghdad during the day.
The 14 victims today were people who worked at computer shops and at computer repair shops in a strip near Baghdad's Technology University. The people who kidnapped them were apparently driving government-issue four-wheel drive vehicles, and they were wearing camouflage uniforms. 20 bodies were also found in Baghdad today, including seven headless corpses that were pulled from the Tigris River. There is yet more horrific news about school shootings in the United States of America. Three fatal incidents within a week now, starting with an incident last Wednesday in Bailey, Colorado, which resulted in the death of one female student and the adult male hostage taker. Then on Friday, a 15-year-old student apparently shot and killed his school principal in rural Wisconsin, about 50 miles northwest of Madison. He said that he had been bullied. He'd been disciplined the day before for having tobacco at school. Then today, another horrible incident, this time in Paradise, Pennsylvania. A 32-year-old man worked the third shift last night as a trucker. He drove a milk truck. He took his kids to the school bus stop this morning, then brought a truck full of lumber and 2x4s, at least one gun, to the closest school to his house. It was an Amish school with about 27 students in grades 1 through 8. The man lined up the students next to the blackboard. He let the boys go. Then he tied the feet together of the female students. He tied their feet together, and he shot at least 10 girls. Three of them died. Seven were injured, seriously injured. Here's the Pennsylvania State Police Commissioner, Jeff Miller.
It appears that when he began shooting the victims, these victims were shot execution style in the head. So a number of the victims that we removed out of here that did not expire on the site were shot in the head. Some were shot in the arms.
Just an unbelievably awful story. The victims range in age from 6 to 13. The gunman, after he shot these girls, apparently then killed himself. As for a motive, police say he did leave suicide notes for his family. And the state troopers say there was some indication that this was some kind of revenge attack for something that happened to the gunman 20 years ago when he was a kid. And they also said that the revenge motive might explain why he only targeted female students and let the male students go. There's obviously lots still left unsaid about this tragedy thus far. I'm certain that there's a lot that we will never know. But as far as tonight and today's program goes, we will keep you posted as we learn more. The Al-Qaeda AV Club is up and running and may be getting scooped by the Sunday Times in London. On Friday, Al-Qaeda seems to have released itself, as promised, a new tape from Ayman al-Zawahiri, the number two guy in Al-Qaeda International. This is Ayman al-Zawahiri's second videotape in a month.
وَلَا يَزِيدُنَا هَوْلُ الْقِتَالِ مَزِيدًا مِنَ الْإِصْرَارِ عَلَى الْمَزِيدِ مِنَ الْبَذْلِ وَالتَّضْحِيَةِ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ.
The Associated Press is translating that specific cut as, quote, "The terribleness of the fighting only increases our determination to sacrifice and give ourselves in the path of Allah," which means apparently he's talking way faster than that sounded like. Here's Lauren Freyer for the Associated Press.
Ayman al-Zawahiri called President Bush a deceitful liar who intentionally deceived the U.S. when he started the war in Iraq. He also mentions the Al-Qaeda number three man, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the alleged September 11th mastermind who was captured in Pakistan in March 2003.
Zawahiri, as you heard there, referenced recent reports that al-Qaeda guys are being moved to Guantanamo. He talked about Darfur and about the Pope. He also addressed George W. Bush directly, saying, quote, "Why don't you tell them how many million of citizens of America and its allies you intend to kill in search of the imaginary victory and in breathless pursuit of the mirage toward which you are driving your people's sons in order to increase your profits?" Oddly, Zawahiri was standing in front of a tiny decorative cannon while he said this. Which I thought kind of, I don't know, I just thought it kind of undercut the whole tough guy thing. Nice tiny cannon, Eamon. Tiny little cannon. Just decorative. That was on Friday. But then yesterday, the Sunday Times in London posted another al-Qaeda video, this one showing Osama bin Laden addressing a crowd of people and showing what appears to be the last will and testament of Muhammad Atta and one of the other 9/11 hijackers. The Times posted this tape without sound, and it seemed, this is the interesting thing here, it seems like it may not have been put together and ready for full release yet. Some terrorism experts are speculating that this tape on the Sunday Times website, maybe that tape got leaked to the Sunday Times, which would seem to be a good thing if there is a leaker inside al-Qaeda. The fallout from the Mark Foley scandal has only begun to fall. He was, of course, up for re-election this fall, and election rules say that Mark Foley will still be the name on the ballot in his district. But Republicans in that district, the 16th district, which is kind of a crazy gerrymandered Rorschach inkblot of a district around Lake Okeechobee in Florida, Republicans there met today and picked a no-name state rep named Joe Negron as the new Republican in that race, even though Joe Negron's name will not be on the ballot. So on November 7th, voters in that district will have to either pick the Democrat, Tim Mahoney, or Mark Foley. And by Mark Foley, they will have to mean not the congressional page lech, hey, let me take off your shorts, not that guy, but the Mark Foley who really, sort of secretly, magically, is actually a guy they've never heard of named Joe Negron. Tim Mahoney is the Democrat again, just so you know. And for all the hoo-ha, you are going to hear about what a strong Republican district Mark Foley represented and how popular he was. Know this. The last Democratic poll in Mark Foley's district before the scandal had Foley under 50% for re-election, just so you know. The Speaker of the House, Denny Hastert, is fighting for his life in this Mark Foley scandal. He initially said he only found out about Foley's little lechery problem last week. Then he said, okay, I heard about it this past spring, and then there was news this weekend that the leadership was informed last year. Now congressional pages are saying they got warnings from Republican staffers on Capitol Hill 5 years ago. And still, Hastert left Mark Foley as chair of the Exploited Children's Caucus, while other Republicans are warning congressional pages to stay away from him. At least some of what appear to be meetings and certainly the instant message kind of sex stuff that has been released happened after those warnings went out to congressional pages, so after it was widely known among Republicans on Capitol Hill. And Denny Hastert is left saying, hey, it didn't seem sexual in nature to me. A 52-year-old asking a 16-year-old to send pictures of himself and telling him how much he works out? That just didn't seem weird. Hastert says the messages were overly friendly. Hastert, as I say, is in trouble here. He called a press conference today to publicly split hairs about which creepy Mark Foley messages he knew about and didn't respond to, and which creepy Mark Foley messages he didn't know about and didn't respond to.
No one in the Republican leadership, nor Congressman Shimkus, saw those messages until last Friday when ABC News released them to the public.
House Speaker Denny the Fridge Hastert speaking to reporters today.
When they were released, Congressman Foley resigned, and I'm glad he did. If he had not, I would have demanded his expulsion from the House of Representatives.
Like I did with Bob Ney, when he admitted selling his votes and selling his office and... Oh, yeah, I never asked for his resignation, did I?
As a parent and the Speaker of the House, I am disgusted that Congressman Foley broke that trust.
Disgusted. Denny Hastert is disgusted, everybody, now that it's out in the press, even though he's known about this for months. Okay, so issue resolved. Speaker of the House thinks Mark Foley is gross. Now that that's settled, maybe we can just give him back his old job of chairing the Exploited Children's Caucus, even while we're warning congressional pages to stay away from him. Even conservatives are now calling for Denny Hastert's resignation. Ronald Reagan's talk show host son, Michael Reagan, as well as Citizens United President David Bossie, are first out of the gate. Babe Buchanan was on television this afternoon. Pat Buchanan's sister, former treasurer of the United States, was on television this afternoon criticizing him. Lots of folks just starting to go after Hastert. Expect this to snowball. Expect there to be more. And finally, something that is still vaguely disgusting, but not disgusting in the specific way that everything else on this show has been disgusting today. Ah, what a relief. Do you remember my reporting last week on the World Chess Championships? Remember this? On Thursday, I talked about on the show, a Bulgarian guy who was losing at the World Chess Championships to a Russian guy. The losing guy complained that the Russian guy was taking too many potty breaks. 50 trips to the bathroom per game or more. The insinuation was that he had a computer or something else in the potty that was helping him. And indeed, the contracts the players signed before the match said they could each have their own private bathroom. And in fact, there are no surveillance cameras in those bathrooms as there are everywhere else at the championships. Well, on Friday, this all came to a head. Actually, was what I was going to say, but that sounds like a nautical joke. Anyway, it all came to a head when the Chess Federation locked the private bathrooms and told the players they would instead have to use public bathrooms. The Russian guy, Mr. Potty Break, went straight to the door of his locked bathroom, sat down, and would not budge. He refused to play. He had a potty sit-in. He said he would not play until they unlocked his private loo. The Chess Federation, would not unlock his private loo. The Russian forfeited his game, and now, who knows, presumably nuclear war between Bulgaria and Russia. Or something. Those are some of the stories I've been following today, but now for news that gathers in fluffy clumps under the sofa, here's Kent Jones.
From the Rachel Maddow Show, now it's Kent Jones Now, with Kent Jones Now.
Hello, Dateline Japan. Japanese scientists have identified a molecule which, when injected into the brains of rats, made them feel full, sated, stuffed. No thanks, I'll have the check. This molecule is called Nesfatin 1, is produced naturally in the brain, and could lead to new ways to treat obesity in humans, though hopefully without having to inject it into our brains. After scientists injected Nesfatin 1 into rat brains, the rodents began to eat less and lose weight. Some even started hovering over their fellow rats while they were eating and saying things like, you know, bread is nothing but carbs. And why don't you just staple that cake right onto your thighs? Just get it over with. They were mean afterwards. That's what I'm saying. Rachel?
Thank you, Ken. A moment on the lips, a lifetime on the hips.
Hello.
Remember when Bush said that publicly?
Did,
he was talking
he
about
he?
He's like, I've had too much birthday cake. You know, you just taste it for a second, then you have to live with it forever.
Oh, the temptation.
I know. Nippy. Caddy. Anyway, all right, coming up next, I got today's underbelly. It is a brand new underbelly, one I have never done ever before, and one that I thought I would never have to do. It's a surprise to me that I have to do this, but it is the missing link that connects the Mark Foley scandal to the Mel Gibson scandal to the scandal of the member of Congress who is now on his way to prison who once raised money for his reelection effort by sending out a letter calling me a cross-dressing lesbian. What ties all these things together other than me? I'll tell you when I come back. 47 minutes past the hour, The Rachel Maddow Show.
You're listening to The Rachel Maddow Show.
I'm at the top of my game. I'm right up there with the big dogs. Leave the saving the world to the men? I don't think so.
On Air America Radio.
You're listening to AM 1320.
The Morning Retort with Scott and Sam.
To understand it,
Miss Romney.
What drives people?
Massachusetts governor. If he can't protect his own citizens from tunnels, how will he protect you from terrorists? Done. Campaign is dead. See how easy it was?
It was that easy.
See, that's the problem on the left. You're the problem right there. You got all, you think you got all the answers to all the little questions that does not drive a lot of people outside of California, outside of both coasts, outside of California and New York. Northeast. I mean, this is not the world. This is not the center of the universe, Mr. Sims.
If Romney gets the nomination, the tunnels win. Think about it. Taurus, Terra, Earth, tunnels.
Do the math, Scott!
It's very erotic. I'm being turned on by all this talk.
Scott and Sims, mornings 5:30 to 9 on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
Play perfectly. I just joined Cash Creek's Cash Club, and I received $100 in free bonus play.
Play profitably.
I just joined Cash Club and automatically got an instant shot at $1 million.
Play endlessly. Cash Creek has thousands of the newest, hottest slots, and bonus play just keeps the action going.
Play, bonusfully at Cash Creek, Northern California's only AAA four-diamond casino resort. Just join the Cash Club, and you can start out with up to $500 in free bonus play. It's like playing with their money. Well, not like it. You really are playing with their money. Plus, don't forget the instant shot at $1 million. And you can't play on an empty stomach, so they're giving away over 150 $25 dining comps every day. So you can play and dine on their dollar. Cash Creek Casino Resort. Well played. Visit by taking I-80 to 505 North and 16 West. For tickets, visit cashcreek.com or any Ticketmaster outlet. AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel, invites all state workers and their friends to come celebrate Thank You State Workers Day at the state capitol on Wednesday, October 4th. The celebration will be on the capitol's west lawn from 11 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. It's sponsored by AM 1320, the California State Employees Association, and the Capital Weekly Newspaper. Come and sign up to win a free California weekend vacation to either Disneyland or San Diego from Getaway Today Vacations. Enjoy free ice cream, courtesy of Ovations Food Services. Pick up lots of giveaways and valuable information for state workers and retirees. We want to thank state workers for your service to the public. You should be proud of who you are and what you do for the people of California. So come join the celebration. Thank You State Workers Day, Wednesday, October 4th from 11 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. State Capitol, West Lawn.
The only...
Poking a sharp stick at the soft white underbelly of the right-wing scheme machine. The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
Welcome back. It is 52 minutes past the hour. Happy Monday. This is The Rachel Maddow Show, where every day we do enjoy poking a sharp stick at the soft white underbelly of American politics. Flipping over the day's news to show you the slimy, scheming political tactics at work underneath. Today's underbelly political tactic is one that I don't think I ever could have foreseen. Honestly, this one is a bit of a surprise to me, but I think it's for real. What is the common thread that is tying together the Mark Foley congressional page lech story to the Bob Ney on his way to prison for corruption story, to the Mel Gibson anti-Semitic tirade in Malibu story? What is the common thread tying those things together, other than the fact that these are all right-wing blowhards screwing up and getting caught in the past few months? What else ties them together? Well, do you remember what Mel Gibson did as soon as the anti-Semitic tirade police report became public? Do you remember where he went and what his first public announcement was right after that scandal broke? First of all, of course, he said, "I'm so sorry. I don't believe any of what I said. I'm a drunk." And he went immediately into rehab. There was a little consternation over him doing outpatient rehab instead of inpatient, but he went right into rehab. And on the one hand, that makes sense. That made sense, since he had a bottle of tequila in the car with him when he was stopped. On the other hand, why a person might be driven by the demon drink to say something they really, truly never, ever once believed in their whole lives is hard to believe for a normal person, but darn near impossible to believe for the guy who just made the Jews Killed Christ movie and whose dad says the Holocaust never happened. I'm just saying. That was Mel Gibson. Then we got Bob Ney. We knew for months that Bob Ney was on his way to the Crowbar Hotel, that he would be the next congressman in line to go to the pokey for the Jack Abramoff Republican corruption and bribery scandal in Congress. A couple of Fridays ago, Bob Ney finally, after his long, slow fall off the cliff, finally pled guilty to federal corruption charges and is now going to do about 2.5 years in federal prison. What was the first thing Bob Ney said publicly after announcing his guilty plea? It wasn't, "and I resign from Congress." No, he still hasn't done that, still getting a paycheck. The first thing he said, the concurrent announcement from Bob Ney, along with "I just pled guilty," was, "I'm a drunk. That's why I did the stuff that's sending me to prison. I'm going into rehab." There's been no word from Bob Ney in the intervening weeks. It's been 3 weeks now, because apparently he's unavailable for comment. He's in rehab. Now, again, like Mel Gibson, it's hard to believe that Congressman Bob Ney might never have taken all those bribes and the free trips and the gambling chips and all the rest if it weren't for the demon drink. But if you say you're a drunk, maybe you get sympathy for that instead of condemnation for being a corrupt rat bastard who sold your office and sold your vote. Oh, our sympathies are with him. He's in rehab. Also, conveniently, he's unavailable for comment while he's away getting the help he needs. And now we're seeing it again. The demon drink made me say anti-Semitic things to police officers. The demon drink made me accept free golfing trips. And now the demon drink made me tell 15-year-old congressional pages that I wanted to see them naked. Mark Foley, congressional page, Letch, resigned, says nothing for 48 hours, then announced it. Announces, you guessed it, "I'm a drunk. That's why I letched after those kids. It's the demon drink. And now if you'll excuse me, I need to cash in your sympathy for me supposedly having a drinking problem while I am unavailable for comment for a long time in rehab." Keep that one in your pocket for when you finally get caught for something really bad. The demon drink made me do it. It might help prophylactically to be seen every now and again drinking something, just to prime the pump for that eventual defense. The Rachel Maddow Show.
This is the Nation Minute on Air America Radio.
The Jack Abramoff scandal is not over yet. According to a bipartisan report issued by the House Government Reform Committee, Abramoff had more than 400 contacts with the White House since 2001. That's far more than the two contacts previously alleged by the Secret Service. What else could the White House be hiding about its relationship with the disgraced lobbyist? The new report also alleges that Abramoff enlisted the help of Republican National Committee Chairman Ken Mellman to get Justice Department money for an Indian tribal client, that he frequently gave expensive sporting tickets to a former assistant who was working for Karl Rove. Federal law prohibits government officials from accepting such gifts from lobbyists. Abramoff has been all but forgotten in Washington. It's about time that someone dug deeper and refreshed people's memories. I'm Ari Berman from The Nation magazine for Air America.
Theaters. please, you're not a cardiologist on call. You're a putz whose babysitter wants to know where the ketchup is. And then you tell her in the middle of the movie. Sometimes it's so loud in the theater I can barely hear what the black people are yelling at the screen. There is a simple solution. Put your cell phone on vibrate and then up your... All right, new rule. No more celebrating gastric bypass. Carney Wilson, Al Roker, and now Star Jones are all being heralded by the media for stapling their stomachs shut. They shouldn't be. They're not making a brave choice to change. They're giving money to doctors to reroute their ability to turn food into crap.
Laughing at the Truth. AM 1320.
AM 1320 KCTC, Sacramento's Left Channel, streaming live at 1320leftchannel.com.
A gunman invades an Amish schoolhouse.
They heard shots, multiple shots in quick succession.
Republican leaders distance themselves from Mark Foley.
I have known him for all the years he's served in this house, and he deceived me too.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Bill Whitney. Pennsylvania Dutch Country is one of the most picturesque places in America, where horse-drawn buggies are a familiar sight on the winding country roads. Today, those roads were filled with police cars and ambulances converging on an Amish schoolhouse in the tiny town of Nickel Mine.
You wonder how it can happen in a village like Nickel Mine.
He lives across the street from the school, where a heavily armed man barricaded himself inside this morning.
And I looked out the window with my binoculars, and I watched the police breaking the windows down and the door to get in.
It was already too late. CBS News correspondent Byron Pitts is there.
It all started at approximately 9:51 this morning. The gunman, 32-year-old Charles Carl Roberts IV, parked his pickup outside Nickel Mines Amish School. Besides the two guns, Roberts carried inside flex cuffs, wire, and enough 2x4s and 2x6s to board all the exits. For the next 45 minutes, he terrorized about 25 students and teachers in this single room about the size of a two-car garage. There was no place to hide, no way to escape.
Eventually, Roberts let the boys and several women leave, but kept 11 girls in the room with him. When police tried to storm the building, State Police Commissioner Jeffrey Miller says Roberts opened fire.
It appears that when he began shooting the victims, these victims were shot execution style in the head. So a number of the victims were shot in the head, some were shot in the arms.
Three girls are dead, eight in critical condition. The motive, unclear.
He did make a statement to his wife on the phone that he was acting out in a way to achieve revenge for something that happened 20 years ago.
They're still looking into that. Miller says Roberts spoke to his wife before the attack when he dropped their children off at the school bus stop. The normally reserved and self-sufficient Amish community is reeling.
We never experienced anything like this. I wonder what, you know, what it all means. What's God telling us?
Now this.
Deep inside the fax machine at your office, there's a business opportunity. See this toner cartridge? With the new Discover business card, you get cash back bonus on business purchases, even more on office supplies. So this baby not only makes faxes, it makes cash for your business. Yow! And it's also very hot.
It's time to take control with the new Discover business card. Visit discoverbiz.com/control or call 1-888-221-4BIZ to learn more.
Some people think all insurance is the same. They buy the least expensive they can find, and then they have an insurance claim. That's when they learn the hard way that not all insurance companies treat you the same. If being treated fairly and paid quickly are important to you when you or your business has a loss, you want Chubb. When you insure with Chubb, you're buying real insurance. So insure with the best. Insure with Chubb. To learn more, go to Chubb.com.
Florida Republican Mark Foley, who abruptly resigned from Congress on Friday, has checked himself into rehab for, quote, alcohol and emotional difficulties. In a written statement, Foley said, "I deeply regret and accept full responsibility for the harm I have caused." The harm involves Foley's computer messages to teenage boys who were congressional pages. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss reports on the fallout.
As the FBI and Florida state authorities started looking into criminal charges, House Republican leaders went into full damage control. House Speaker Dennis Hastert returned to an otherwise empty Capitol to again condemn Foley and insist others didn't know what he was up to.
I have known him for all the years he's served in this House, and he deceived me too.
But Hastert and other Republican leaders did know about some suggested emails a year ago, and Democrats say it's an outrage they kept that secret. Meanwhile, Republicans in Florida are trying to save Foley's seat, naming a member of the state legislature to run in his place. Bob Fuzz, CBS News, Washington.
Blake Yoakum was a page in 2003.
Congressman Foley, I would say, was the winner in knowing the most pages and knowing them on a first-name basis.
Yoakum says he and some of his fellow pages suspected Foley was gay, but they never thought of him as a pedophile. Foley, as co-chair of a congressional caucus on missing and exploited children, helped write the Adam Walsh Child Protection Act, which makes it harder for sexual predators to reach out to kids on the Internet. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez cautions that the investigation is still in its very early stages, but he calls the Foley emails disturbing and pretty awful. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Okay, Rick, we'll make this pretty.
The Internet. It's not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. Massive tubes. It really is the Internet consumer bill of rights. Because you got tangled up with all of these things that are going on the Internet commercially. The world has turned against this. If your own personal Internet, that is you and me. You and me is the Internet. Tubes. The Internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
It's a series of tubes.
Studios in New York City. This is the Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
As we say in the radio business, if you put that on the radio, people will listen to it.
Welcome to the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. It is Monday, the 2nd of October, 2006, 6 minutes past the hour right now. Coming up on the show today, an update on the president of Kazakhstan and his visit to the United States. He did get to go to Kennebunkport and meet President Bush's mommy, but he did not get all he was promised.
I like play table tennis. I like shoot dog.
I'll tell you what presidential event was canceled at the last minute in just a moment. Also on the show this hour, we'll talk with Willem Marks. He unwittingly stumbled into a shocking summer internship in Baghdad with the Lincoln Group. You remember the Lincoln Group, the firm that somehow managed to land another giant U.S. government contract in spite of the scandal over them paying off Iraqi newspapers to publish articles favor to the U.S. Former intern Willem Marks joins us in studio in just a moment. Plus, we'll tell you the real reason the military wants to upgrade the Humvee. That's all coming up this hour. But first, a quick update on a few of today's top headlines, starting as we do every day here on the Rachel Maddow Show with the news from Iraq and life during wartime. On Friday night, the U.S. military apparently raided the compound of the top Sunni leader in the Iraqi parliament. His name is Adnan al-Dulaimi. He heads up the biggest coalition of Sunni parties in the Iraqi parliament. And the U.S. says one of al-Dulaimi's guards was a member of al-Qaeda in Iraq, who was planning on using his position on Dulaimi's security detail to stage a major suicide bomb attack inside the Green Zone, the heavily fortified city within a city in central Baghdad, which houses the headquarters for most U.S. interests and the Iraqi government. Shortly after Iraqi TV started to report on that American raid, the Iraqi government announced an unprecedented curfew in Baghdad. There are often vehicle curfews in Baghdad where you can't drive, but for the first time since the start of the war on Saturday, the curfew extended to Baghdad pedestrians. You weren't allowed to walk in Baghdad on Saturday, let alone drive. that didn't stop bombings Saturday in other cities. There were fatal explosions in the northern cities of Tal Afar and Kirkuk on Saturday. The U.S. military has also announced the death of a soldier in a Humvee accident near Mosul on Saturday, and the deaths of two U.S. Marines in Anbar province yesterday, as well as a British soldier yesterday in Basra. A man carrying a large kitchen knife was arrested after scaling the back fence at Tony Blair's house last night at 10 Downing Street at the Prime Minister's official residence in London. The Prime Minister was home at the time of the intrusion. The man did apparently fight with the police when they caught him, but nobody was injured. He went with a kitchen knife. Also, while we are reporting news about the British Prime Minister that, frankly, is really of only spurious news value, okay, hey, I admit it. I am also pleased to report that the dodgy British newspaper, The Sunday Telegraph, which I by no means endorse, still, they reported yesterday that Kevin Spacey, the actor of Kaiser Soze, American Beauty fame, they reported that Tony Blair sought advice from Kevin Spacey last week about how to kind of sex up his long farewell speech at the Labour Party conference. A source told The Sunday Telegraph, quote, "He got Blair to pause a lot more than he usually does and did some work on his posture. He also warned Tony Blair to use his eyes to a much greater effect." Speaking of dodgy foreign guys, for the last few weeks, it felt like I alone was reporting obsessively about the visit by Borat's president, the president of Kazakhstan, to Bush's mommy's house. Nursultan Nazarbayev, autocratic dictatorial leader of Kazakhstan, who has never held a free election to threaten his power, whose political enemies tend to turn up with suspicious gunshot wounds to the head, who banned opposition political parties and closed the newspapers, Bush brought old Nursultan home to meet his mommy last week in Kennebunkport, Maine. He also had a joint appearance with him at the Oval Office.
"I have watched very carefully the development of this important country from one that was in the Soviet sphere to one that now is a free nation. I appreciate your leadership, Mr. President. And I welcome you here to the White House. And I'm looking forward to buying you lunch."
That lunch thing there is important, as well as the barely constrained smirks when he said free nation. Free nation except for the whole legal opposition and elections thing. Anyway, but that lunch thing he said at the end is important. Remember last week, they said that Borat's president, the president of Kazakhstan, was going to have a state dinner in Washington. The state dinner is the big kahuna in terms of international diplomatic welcomes. They announced last week that he was getting a state dinner, and then apparently, the last minute, they scaled it back just to lunch. Upon learning that he wasn't getting the state dinner, the Kazakh president apparently pistol-whipped White House spokesman Tony Snow. Oh, that's unconfirmed. Lots of back and forth this weekend about the revelations in the Bob Woodward book, State of Denial. It was formally put on the market today. I'm still looking forward to my chance to read it. I haven't yet. As for bombshells that are surfacing in the press, it seems like we've got a few. Condoleezza Rice brushed off a warning from the head of the CIA on July 10th, 2001, which said that an attack on the U.S. was imminent. Condoleezza Rice is denying that, or at least she says she doesn't specifically recollect it. It certainly wasn't reported to the 9/11 Commission. Bob Woodward also says Condoleezza Rice couldn't get Donald Rumsfeld to return her calls. It says that the book says that Andrew Card, Bush's chief of staff, wanted to replace Donald Rumsfeld, even though Bush didn't. Though Rumsfeld denies that as well, and Card kind of denies it as well. It also says, the book says that Colin Powell did not resign as Secretary of State, but Bush fired him. And that, to me, seems, how do I say this, extremely likely. Because Colin Powell had three major strikes against him in this administration, strikes that in any other normal presidential administration would actually be assets. Number one, Colin Powell was not an ideological neocon kook. He actually had actual practical experience with war making and stuff. Strike one. Strike two, he was willing to disagree with the president, at least privately, if not publicly. Strike two. And strike number three, he was about 10 times as popular as George W. Bush. So clearly, he had to go. And finally, sports thievery. The Missouri Sports Hall of Fame has suffered a grievous loss and then a glorious recovery. Last Monday or Tuesday, someone walked up to the decorated walkway outside the Missouri Sports Hall of Fame. They had at this decorated walkway, they had 16 great Missouri sports legends represented in bronze. And a thief made off with George Brett. With a bronze bust of George Brett, to be specific, the Hall of Fame third baseman, it was on Monday or Tuesday when somebody stole him. On Friday, an anonymous caller called the sheriff in Lake of the Ozarks and said, "Hey, I saw a bronze George Brett in a ditch in Camdenton, but you didn't hear it from me." Sure enough, Mr. Bronze Brett was recovered, dusted off, and popped back onto his pedestal outside the Hall of Fame. No word on what additional precautions will be needed to protect the busts from thieving brass peddlers in the future. Those are my top stories this hour. Meanwhile, for a report from someone who spent all day yesterday watching football on mute while listening to New Order, here's Kent Jones.
Hello, Rachel. In week four of the NFL, Atlanta, Dallas, Indianapolis, Houston, Buffalo, Carolina, Baltimore, Kansas City, St. Louis, Cleveland, Washington, New England, and Chicago all won. If your favorite team wasn't called, they lost. Coming up tonight, Green Bay, Philadelphia, the Cheeseheads versus the Cheesesteaks in the Velveeta Bowl in baseball. The playoff matchups are finally set. In the American League, it's the Yankees versus the Tigers and the Twins versus the A's. And in the National League, it's the Mets against the Dodgers and the Cardinals against the Padres. We have liftoff tomorrow afternoon. And as yet another disappointing season winds up, the Chicago Cubs' Dusty Baker and the San Francisco Giants' Felipe Alou have both been ousted as manager. The Cubs were 66-96 this year. The Giants went 76-85. Their ballparks, however, nice. And in college football, and in more thievery news, as it turns out, a video camera caught a thief stealing a laptop computer out of a hotel room that contained the University of Auburn's offensive game plan. Was this heist part of a conspiracy orchestrated by last weekend's opponent, the University of South Carolina Fighting Gamecocks? Well, though it makes a better story, and in spite of rampant internet rumors to that effect, the answer, said Auburn head coach Tommy Tuberville, is no. Apparently, the thief was just some guy who thought he could just walk into a room full of football coaches and jack their computer. Said Tuberville, quote, "We saw who did it, and it takes a lot of nerve to walk in there with 300-pounders standing around it and pick it up and put it in your pants and walk out the door." Unquote.
Wow.
Inspired by the robbery, Coach Tuberville has drawn up a play in which the Auburn quarterback stuffs the ball in his pants and then walks casually in the end zone. Avoiding eye contact. That's the key thing. Rachel? Oh, by the way, I did not steal the bust of George Brett. Not me. The Missouri thing, I wouldn't do that. I'd think about it.
But wouldn't that be cool to have at home?
Somebody had it at home for an hour. Or what am I thinking? Probably the frat house.
The frat house out of it. Yeah. Or they brought it to the scrap metal guys and they were like, "We don't take brass."
Hey, I'm not melting down George Brett. You know who that is? He's in the Missouri Sports Hall of Fame.
Or he was.
Put that back. Now. Anyway.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
Tommy Tuberville? Is that really his name?
Tommy Tuberville, coach of the University of Auburn Tigers.
Potato Town, Tuberville.
He's fantastic.
Awesome.
Yeah.
17 minutes past the hour. It doesn't get any better than that. Tommy Tuberville and the lost laptop down the pants with 300-pounders and George Brett saved from the ditch.
Good day.
Good day. At least some things are good. 17 minutes past the hour. When we come back, something you did not know about pumping gas involving a secret series of tubes. And no, I am not talking about the internet. I'll be right back.
You're listening to The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
I like to play table tennis. I like to shoot dope.
On Air America Radio.
It is nice.
It's Enid Live. We do not...
listen up. What about your future? Are you unhappy with your current job? You want to make great money and get the promotion you deserve? Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to sackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's sackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, sackjobs.com is a click away. At sackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
AM 1320 Sacramento's Left Channel invites you to the 5th Annual Voters Education Candidates Forum 2006 at the Radisson on Saturday, October 7th from 1 p.m. to 5:30. This free event presented by the Asian Pacific Islander American Public Affairs Association is your opportunity to hear candidates running for office, including a debate between California Lieutenant Governor hopefuls John Garamendi and Tom McClintock. Also expect a lively debate on the downtown sports arena issue between supporters including Daryl Steinberg and foes like Assemblymember Dave Jones.
You can also win one of two $1,000 cash raffle prizes for taking a day off from work to vote.
Be an informed voter. Join 1,000 other interested citizens at this year's Voter Education and Candidates Forum 2006 at the Radisson on Saturday, October 7th from 1 to 5:30 p.m. More information is at APAPA.org. That address again is APAPA.org.
The only right new rule. Prince Harry is going to hurt someone. Look at this kid. He's a thundering ball of rage. His mom's dead. His father dates rotted tree bark. His brother gets to be king, and he's destined to spend the rest of his life being photographed doing nothing. Arrest him before he kills a woman. New rule. Country music stars can't be authors. Charlie Daniels' new book, Ain't No Rag, Freedom, Family, and the Flag, is a collection of musings by noted white trash icon Charlie Daniels on subjects ranging from American flags to American flag bumper stickers to what to do to a hippie if you catch him trying to burn your flag. Before this book, I was ambivalent on the issue of flag burning. Now I find myself reconsidering the question of book burning.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
Exactly how much does one have to drink to pickle one's liver? It's time for Ask Dr. Maddow. Rachel Maddow is a doctor. Just not that kind of doctor.
So Dr. Rachel Maddow is perhaps best known as the world's leading authority on stolen George Brett statuary. Her greatest joy comes from sharing her vast trove of general knowledge with our urbane listeners. So if there's something you've been dying to know, give us a call at 212-871-8173 or send us an email at maddowonline.com. Today's question is from Andy in New York.
I would like to know, how do the gas pumps know when they finished filling your tank in order to shut off?
How do the gas tanks and the gas pumps know?
There's a little man in there that measures these things.
That's right. That's why we can't close the borders. Because we need to hire the... No, that's not it. No.
It's actually a series of tubes. It's just like that internet conundrum that Senator Stevens explained to us the other day. About how you can't put the internet on the back of a truck. Series of tubes. Anyway, you think of the gas pump nozzle, right? It kind of looks like a gun, sort of, with a trigger thingy that you hold, and then it's attached to a metal tube that you stick into your car's gas tank. And depending on which state you live in, that tube might have a little plastic shield like an elephant's nose over it, or it might not. The gas shuts off when a valve at the top of the tube closes, and that cuts off the flow of gas. But the question is, how does that valve know when to close? That tube that you stick into your gas tank is actually, really, a series of tubes. It's two tubes in one. There's the big spout through which the gas comes out, but next to it, something you can't really see, but it's in there, is a smaller tube that is empty. This is a little air tube that runs from the shutoff valve down the spout and ends with a little opening at the tip. Normally, air flows into that opening, but when the gas tank starts to fill with gas, the opening gets submerged in gasoline. Air stops flowing into the little tube. It creates a vacuum, and it shuts the shutoff valve, and the gas stops flowing.
Phenomenal. Why is everything in life a series of tubes?
Everything is a series of tubes.
I think everything is.
Except for humans. We're actually just one big tube.
Just one? Well, just the one?
Just the one.
I'm going to ask you more about that later.
Don't,
thank you.
Don't.
Thanks, Andy. Thank you, Doctor. Remember, if you have a question for Dr. Maddow, not about tubes, call us at 212-871-8173 or send us an email at maddowonline.com for Ask Dr. Maddow.
Thank you very much, Kent. It's a tube with a lot of folds in it, but really, it's just the one.
Yeah. Okay.
We're earthworms, basically. This is why I'm not a biologist. Anyway, now it's time for the campaign countdown.
And they're off!
One of the big question marks for the November elections is how much the Jack Abramoff Republican corruption and bribery scandal is going to hurt Republican chances this fall. How much it's going to tar the Republican Party, the White House, the members of Congress who've already gone to prison, not to mention those who haven't yet gone to prison, but they're holding a bed for them just in case. On Friday, we learned about, 485 different contacts between Jack Abramoff and his lobbying team, and the White House. 82 separate meetings with Karl Rove's office alone. Karl Rove used to have Jack Abramoff get him all his sporting events tickets. Very subtle. Nice. The House Government Reform Committee report that we found out about on Friday says that Abramoff and his partners showered members of the White House staff with $25,000 in meals and drinks, not to mention tickets and other gifts. If we do the math just on the meals and drinks thing, ethics rules say you can only accept gifts under $20, which means that we're talking about 1,250 meals that all cost $20 or less, unless someone didn't report their illegal lobbyist contributions from Jack Abramoff to the White House. Huh.
You're asking about pictures. I had my picture taken with him, evidently. Having my picture taken with someone doesn't mean that... You know, I'm a friend with him or know him very well. It's hard for me to say I didn't have pictures with the guy when I did. I frankly don't even remember having my picture taken with the guy. I don't know him. But I can't say I didn't ever meet him. I've never sat down with him and had a discussion with the guy.
So there's the presidential pictures with Abramoff, and then there's the 1,250 White House staffer $20 or less meals with Jack Abramoff, and then there's Karl Rove using Jack Abramoff as his ticket agent. Apparently, the White House is very cocky about this whole thing, because tomorrow, on the campaign trail, they are sending the president to do campaign events for two members of Congress who are up to their necks in the Jack Abramoff scandal. Really? Richard Pombo and John Doolittle of California. These are the two guys they are keeping beds empty for in prison in the Abramoff scandal. They're like the top two guys in line. Them and J.D. Hayworth and Conrad Burns. But these two guys, first. And Bush is campaigning for them both on the same day in California tomorrow. They're doing it because they think that this stuff doesn't matter, that people don't care about corruption. I think they're wrong. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Willem Marks, a former PR intern in Baghdad with the scandal-plagued Lincoln Group. He joins us in studio. You're going to want to stick around for this. It's right after the break. This is the Rachel Maddow Show.
It's the Morning Retort with...
and weather from the left. Our lows tonight, we're going to see around 55. It looks like precipitation happened this weekend. I know I was driving in a little bit of rain. Highs coming up tomorrow, 70. We are at 68 here in the River City, and our traffic backed up. Southbound 99 right there by Fruit Ridge Road. San Juan Avenue at Winding Way. We have a three-car crash there as well. And southbound I-5 just north of J Street. Ambulance and emergency vehicles are on scene blocking the lane at a four-car crash. So it looked like it's really stopped up there. Enid Live will continue back in the studios tomorrow at AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
It's new rule, one dear to my heart. Lap dancing is a First Amendment right. The L.A. City Council this week banned lap dancing. What is next, burning books? Lap dancers, or Imagineers, as I like to call them, are artists drawing you into their fantasy world, much like a skilled novelist does. If novelists had perfectly waxed bikini lines. But more importantly, lap dancers are expressing an idea called hope. The hope that someday a skinny young woman with artificial breasts and a navel piercing will want to have sex with you. And without that hope, millions of American men might just as well throw themselves into the sea.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
Hi, this is Jackie Schultz.
And Nisa Davis Hayden.
From the Studio Theater in downtown Sacramento.
And we need your support.
We have a great show at the theater, and we want to make a special offer to all of you AM 1320 Sacramento's Left Channel listeners. Our show is the Tony-nominated musical Pump Boys and Dinettes. Come see the show that audience members are saying will melt your troubles away.
Welcome to Highway 57, somewhere between Frog Level and Smyrna. It's 1982, and on one side of the road is a gas station by four happy-go-lucky guys who provide service with a smile. Opposite, the Cup Sisters own the diner where fun is always on the menu.
The entire performance is filled with humor and song and transports the audience to a simpler, more relaxed time.
Each AM 1320 listener that mentions this ad gets $5 off their ticket. Pump Boys and Dinettes plays Thursdays through Saturdays at 8 and Sundays at 2 through October 8. Call the box office at 446-2668 or go to thestudiotheater.net. We need your support.
Sacramento Philharmonic opens its 10th anniversary season on Saturday, October 14th at 8 p.m. in the Community Center Theater with a world premiere of Night Fox, a new work by world-famous composer and conductor Andre Previn. Commissioned by the Philharmonic in honor of internationally acclaimed painter and Sacramento Wayne Thiebaud. The concert will be repeated on Sunday, October 15th in a 3 p.m. matinee at the Mondavi Center for the Performing Arts in Davis. Previn's musical versatility has made him familiar to millions of people around the world. Wayne Thiebaud gained national prominence in the 1960s with his sensuous images of cakes, pies, and other common objects. He is an esteemed faculty alumnus of Sacramento State University and UC Davis. Other works in the program include works by Dvorak, Ravel, and Haydn. Tickets are available at the Community Center box office, 916-264-5181, and the Mondavi Center at 866-754-ARTS.
Muslims all over the Middle East are rioting in the streets. The latest target of their rage, of course, is Pope Benedict XVI. We all know last Tuesday the Pope gave a speech and quoted 14th century Byzantine Emperor Manuel Palaiologos II, who said, "Everything introduced by Islam is, quote, evil and inhuman." Well, I say, don't back down, your holy Pope, because it's true. What did they ever give us? Optics? Hydraulic engineering? Yeah. Algebra? There's not an eighth grader in the world who would convict you, sir. But a word to the Muslims. You're barking up the wrong tree here. Forget about the Pope. Your real beef is with Palaiologos II. If you want anyone dead, it should be him. And guess what? He already is. That's win-win. Can we all move on? I don't think they thought of that.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio. Visit MaddowOnline.com to read Rachel's blog.
Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. This is the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. Thanks for being with us. Quick update on some stories we have been following today. In Afghanistan today, a suicide bomber jumped in front of a NATO convoy in the city of Kabul and blew himself up. He wounded three soldiers and three civilians and killed himself. The attack came 2 days after another suicide bomber killed 12 people and wounded more than 40 outside Afghanistan's interior ministry. Afghanistan is suffering heavy insurgent attacks, the highest number since the U.S.-led coalition troops there overthrew the Taliban in 2001. U.S. Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist said today that the war against Taliban guerrilla fighters can never be won militarily. So the Tennessee Republican called for efforts to bring the insurgents and their supporters into the Afghan government, which would presumably just, I don't know, make everything more transparent. The people united make a bigger target, all of that. Walmart has announced plans to put wage caps on its workforce, to use more part-time employees, and to schedule more workers on nights and weekends. Walmart, you may recall, is the nation's largest private employer. The company says these new policies will better serve customers and create a more flexible workforce. But investment analysts say Walmart execs have told them the company wants to transform its workforce to 40% part-time. Part-time workers, of course, typically make a lot less than full-time employees. Walmart is denying those allegations from the investment analysts. But company officials do say that part-timers currently make up between 25 and 30% of their workforce. And that's up 20% from last year. We've talked a lot on the show today about the scandal swirling around Congressman Mark Foley and a series of shocking, explicit messages he exchanged with underage congressional pages. If you are interested in that kind of thing, we've linked to both his emails and his instant messages at MaddowOnline.com today. We learned today that the FBI is now looking into this matter. But a Washington watchdog group, which says it first turned over these emails from Mark Foley to a congressional page back in July, This group, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, CREW, is now calling for a separate inquiry to figure out why it is that the FBI might have waited until this weekend to open their inquiry into Mark Foley, even though CREW gave them those emails back in July. Those are some of the stories we're keeping an eye on today. Late last week, we learned that a company called the Lincoln Group had been awarded a two-year multimillion-dollar contract to handle strategic communications for the United States in Iraq. Seems like kind of an ordinary sort of bureaucratic deal. If you forgot that the Lincoln Group was the same PR company that was caught late last year paying Iraqi newspapers to run favorable articles written by the U.S. military. My next guest is Willem Marx. He's a former summer intern with the Lincoln Group in Baghdad. He wrote about his rather surprising experiences there working for the Lincoln Group in the current edition of Harper's Magazine. Willem, thanks for being here. Thanks for joining us.
Rachel, good to be here.
When you arrived in Baghdad for the summer internship with the Lincoln Group, did you know exactly what you were going to be working on? What did you understand when you arrived about the company you were going to be working for?
Well, there wasn't a lot of information available about the company, either on their website or out in the public domain. So trying to research them before I arrived in Baghdad proved very difficult. I had applied for a media internship, which apparently was going to involve pitching story ideas and working with the Iraqi media. And it didn't get a lot more specific than that when I arrived.
So you knew that it was going to have something to do with the Iraqi media, but you didn't know exactly what your job was going to be.
Exactly that.
Once you arrived, how long did it take you to figure out what was the process of adjustment like in terms of figuring out what your job specifically was going to be?
Well, for the first week or so, I did very little and got frustrated. I'd gone out there. I had 2 months in Baghdad before I started my master's here at NYU. And was very keen to try and get immersed in the sort of work they were doing. And after about a week or so, a colleague of mine took me out for lunch and explained exactly what it was the Lincoln Group were doing and the kind of contracts they had with the U.S. military. And at that point, I realized that they weren't really doing what you'd call ordinary media work out there at all.
Was it? And what they were doing was paying to place essentially propaganda stories in the Iraqi press.
Yeah, the major contract when I first arrived out there was one whereby U.S. military unit would send storyboards, they called them, to our company, about five of these a day, and we'd try and place one or two in Iraqi newspapers.
And what's a storyboard?
A storyboard was what the U.S. military termed an article, you or I would probably call it, about an event in Iraq. And they had a number of themes. One would be pro-Iraqi army. One would be anti-insurgency. One would be about the reconstruction efforts in the country. And the information they used to base these storyboards was often gleaned, I think, from the news wires, but they often had quite a slanted, opinionated side to them as well. So you almost might call them op-eds.
So there's these storyboards coming from that were coming from the U.S. military. They go to your office, and then your job is to get them into the Iraqi newspapers.
Absolutely. We'd get them translated into Arabic, first of all, with our Iraqi employees, and then other Iraqi employees would take the Arabic version down to Iraqi newspaper offices and pay editors to run them as straight news stories without letting you know that they were from the U.S. Army.
And, I mean, were you supposed to keep quiet about the fact that you were paying to get these stories in? Was it considered to be kind of a surreptitious thing?
Absolutely.
And how did it get done? What was the process? You literally walk in with a suitcase full of cash?
That's a very good question. And, of course, being a Westerner, I wasn't the one walking into these newspaper offices. It was these Iraqi employees of the Lincoln Group who would walk down there with, you know, story in hand, presumably knew the editors at different newspapers, and I guess did hand over cash because we then saw receipts and would reimburse them. That seemed to be a bit of a problem for the company because later on I realized that the Iraqi employees, were probably asking for more reimbursement than in fact they were charging the newspaper editors, and that discrepancy became a bit of an issue.
Sure. Well, you know, if I put myself in the shoes of the Iraqi employees of the Lincoln Group doing this, exactly, what would you do?
Totally.
What do you think you learned from this process? I mean, clearly you wanted the internship because you want a career in journalism and you thought this was going to be kind of an exciting place to be. What do you feel like you actually took away from this?
I think 2 months in Baghdad at my age was something that not many people are going to have that opportunity as a journalist or as any sort of position, perhaps as a soldier. And I learned that I could operate and work in a very difficult environment, which was something I wanted to see whether that was possible. I certainly didn't get any writing skills from this U.S. military unit. So probably that, working in a stressful environment.
Yeah. I mean, when I found last week that the Lincoln Group was going to get another giant contract, my experience as somebody who in talk radio covers the Bush administration is kind of constant awe and wonder that the people who seem to get into the worst stuff, the people who seem to be part of the worst scandals, always end up getting promoted. You know, like the head of the CIA got the Medal of Freedom. I was shocked to find out that they were after, I associate the Lincoln Group as the infamous Lincoln Group. They got this other giant contract. Were you surprised they got another contract?
I was, and I think it is a sign of what's going on in Iraq. I think possibly the U.S. military don't have many other options, and there's a company that's operating there already. They've already worked with them, whether they've been problematic or not. The military has to make a decision. They want to use these kind of companies to do this kind of work. And if there aren't many competitors out there, then they have to hand it to companies who may have had issues in the past.
Although, when you think about the scandal here, is the scandal that the contract existed for them to pay Iraqi newspapers to plant these stories, or is the scandal the way that the Lincoln Group did it?
Sure. Well, I think that's a very important question. And, you know, some people might have a big moral problem with paying to plant newspaper articles in newspapers.
Only the, like, you know, spreading freedom.
Of course. You've got to question whether the U.S. military have a right, or whether it's a good idea for the U.S. military to be doing that kind of work.
Right.
And secondly, whether the Lincoln Group, given that they're doing that kind of work, are doing it well. And in my opinion, they were neither doing it well, nor should they have been doing it full stop.
In what way were they not doing it well?
Because it's not very subtle if a story is run 3 days after an event which has a very heavily leaning viewpoint in the piece. And if I was an Iraqi reader picking up a newspaper one morning and reading about a bombing that happened 3 days earlier, which had been covered in all the other newspapers 3 days earlier, I'd think, this doesn't sound right.
Right.
This can't be believable. And then when you read that it's, oh, wow, and the U.S. Army's helping here, and look at the Iraqi army, they're so wonderfully powerful and helpful on the streets of Iraq, you just think, this has got to be very fishy.
It also can't be very subtle if we all know them as the Lincoln Group that was paying to put stories in the Iraq. We did all find out about it ultimately, too, so it can't have been that successful.
I presume not, no.
Yeah. Since this article by you came out in Harper's, the article's been getting a lot of attention. And the Lincoln Group is challenging your article, saying that it's basically it was exaggerated and misleading. Did you expect that kind of response from them?
I did. I mean, these are guys that deal in spin. So obviously they want to spin the best possible outcome for themselves in any given situation. during the fact-checking process with the magazine, which is very rigorous, they were obviously informed prior to publication that this piece was coming out, and they were unwilling to specify what was wrong with the piece, but they just said, you know, due to client confidentiality, we're not allowed to respond to this in any detail. And I've since
the client, of course, being the United States of America.
Yeah,
right?
exactly. So that's kind of their mantra they stick to in responding to any kind of criticism.
Willem Marx, excuse me. Nice to meet you, and thanks for writing about your experiences here. You may have a great career ahead of you in journalism. You probably have a really bad career ahead of you in public relations.
Probably true, Rachel. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, and that's a badge of honor, by the way. Willem Marx is the guest. This is the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. We've put a link to Willem's article at the recent in the recent issue of Harper's online at our blog today at maddowonline.com. Kent Jones joins me next. Plus, we got today's pet story coming up, exactly how much it costs to get rid of one pigeon.
I got a fever. And the only prescription is
the Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
It's the Morning Retort with...
this weekend, so I tuned into C-SPAN, and I'm watching the show Washington Journal, and I'm just, I mean, I was stunned. You take a look.
Somebody mentioned the John Stewart program. I've never seen that in my life, and I will go to my grave never having seen it.
Really? You'll go to your grave never having seen it? When's that scheduled for?
Why? I don't see any reason for it. It's a comedian, a self-righteous comedian, taking on airs of grandeur, and I don't really need that.
Yes, Robert Novak does not watch The Daily Show or myself. Not surprising. I keep reading all these articles about how The Daily Show is big amongst the 115-year-old vampire demons, but...
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
Show. It's
49 and a half minutes
past the hour. Now it's Kent Jones Now with Kent Jones Now.
Hello, Dateline, fair and balanced. This week marks the 10th anniversary of the Fox News Channel. A remarkable achievement when you consider they've broadcast 10 years worth of news containing 2 years worth of news. Unfortunately, the channel that taught America to be afraid right now, be afraid right now, is in the midst of its first ever rating slump. They must be thinking, if only we'd hurry up with that invasion of Iran. We've had our graphics ready for months.
When gods collide. Duh, duh.
Analysts say Fox's Bushophilia is starting to sour viewers, and events like Hurricane Katrina played better to the news-gathering strengths of rival CNN. One Fox insider said, we dropped the ball on Katrina because we weren't prepared. I mean, we'd never smeared a hurricane before. Trying to rally his troops, Fox chairman Roger Ailes likes to use motivational tricks like calling meetings at 5 a.m. and running large ads in trade publications saying, Fox News needs new producers. So yes, it seems Fox News is every bit as fun to work for as it is to watch. This is Kent Jones for the Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio. Vigilance.
Thank you very much, Kent. Wow, 10 years.
10 years worth of that.
And you know, they lost millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars for a very long time.
Yeah.
Before they ever started actually making any money.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Isn't that interesting?
There's something about longevity.
Yeah. There's something about people being willing to continue to put money into a media effort that seems to not be necessarily raking it in right out of the gate, that sometimes turns around and becomes very profitable.
I learned a word this morning. It's called investment.
What does that mean? Something to do with waistcoats?
I'll explain it later.
Yeah, this is the Rachel Maddow Show here on some radio network. Anyway, Kent, I saved my pet story for you today.
Oh, monkey.
Oh, monkey. Have you ever been to London?
Yeah.
Have you ever been to Trafalgar Square?
Mm-hmm, I have.
Trafalgar Square.
Pigeons. Rather than monkeys.
Exactly,
but.
Yes. Tons and tons and tons of pigeons. Three things to know about Trafalgar Square. Number one, it has these big weird pillars in the middle of it that are kind of cool. Number two, lots of pigeons. Number three, that's the place the night buses pick you up from.
Right.
When you're out way past, you know, way past dark. And you need to get home. That's where all the night buses go. They all go through Trafalgar Square, even if it's not on the way. Because they figure if you're hammered, you can at least find your way to the pigeon post and they can get you home from there.
Yeah, if you're in Trafalgar Square and you're hammered, don't walk around. The traffic's scary.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
Well, the mayor of London is Ken Livingstone, Red Ken. And he made it his policy when he became mayor of London that he was going to do the impossible. He was going to get rid of the pigeons from Trafalgar Square.
Good luck.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's sure, you could poison every pigeon in the country, but, you know, like, you think about ways to do this, it's hard to imagine that being possible. There are thousands of pigeons in this square.
There are, yeah.
What he did was he hired a hawk handler. A guy
All right.
who, a, what do you call that? Not a falconer, because it's hawks. Anyway,
a hawk.
That's
guessing.
Something different. That's from the flea markets. A pair of hawks and a handler to fly the hawks over the square to frighten away the pigeons.
All right.
And they've been doing this since 2003.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that has cost, since 2003,
$423,000.
226,000 pounds, as long as we're counting. So far, it's been successful in eradicating 2,500 pigeons from Trafalgar Square. There are still 1,000 there.
Okay.
But some of them are gone. But one of the opposition parties in Britain, the Liberal Democrats, which are not as great as they sound, but still, you know, the Liberal Democrats, that's their name. We like the name.
Sure.
The Liberal Democrats have done the math and figured out that it has cost $168 per pigeon since 2003.
Yeah, that's a lot. What are they eating? I'd like to know, the hawks.
Well, you know, do they let the hawks actually kill a pigeon every now and again for the terror factor?
It's like, oh, we brought our kids to Trafalgar Square. Isn't this great? And then the hawk is diving. Mom, the hawks are killing pigeons.
They have $423,000 over 3 years for two hawks and one guy? It seems like they must be feeding them, you know, caviar.
Yeah, I don't know. They're living large.
Yeah. Anyway, but 1,000 pigeons are still there, and that'll be $168,000 to get rid of them if they can figure out how to
do it. And now those pigeons aren't afraid anymore.
Exactly. At some point,
it's
it wears off.
Hawk. Whatever. This is my house.
Yeah. Where the fuck? We've always been here. Anyway. So the Humvee.
Yeah.
The Humvee in Iraq is it's the high mobility multi-purpose wheeled vehicle.
technically. Mm-hmm. And in Iraq, the Humvee, most of the discussion about it has been focused on ways to make the Humvee less vulnerable to roadside bombs. Famously, you know, the Humvee was not designed to have armor on it. And so soldiers have been doing this whole hillbilly armor thing, attaching sheets of metal and even wood around the exterior of it to try to provide some extra protection. The Pentagon says they've ordered armor for all the new Humvees.
Okay, sure.
But the Army, apparently, according to a new article in the Boston Globe, according to an article out today, the Army is now looking for a new design for the Humvee, and it is not about armor. It is about getting better gas mileage.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe so.
In case you didn't know, that was a national security issue. The Humvee that they are using in Iraq right now, that they're using around the world right now for military deployments, gets 4 miles per gallon.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's very good.
Yeah. At least they're still measuring it in miles per gallon instead of gallons per mile.
That's more expensive than killing the pigeons, I think.
That's probably
true. You know? So if we're going to compare those, having our 4-mile-an-hour Humvees.
4 miles an hour. And that's before you put the hillbilly armor on them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They do get, apparently they get 8 miles per gallon on the highway. But I'm guessing that doesn't count Iraqi highways.
Yeah. And if you don't turn on the air conditioning, you probably get better gas mileage after that.
Or you put your turret down, maybe. You get better gas mileage. The Pentagon says they want a Humvee replacement that weighs 30% to 40% less and uses proportionately less fuel. Some armored Humvees, once they've got the armor on them, weigh 5 tons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They need the mini.
Yeah,
they need the mini, I think, with the convertible.
The Hum Mini V.
The Hum Mini.
Yeah. I got something to let you know about Senator Mikakowicz.
Oh. So welcome. Let's give a welcome to Makaka here.
George Allen.
Welcome to America.
Welcome to America to this kid who was born in Virginia, even though I wasn't. George Allen speaking to an all-white crowd with one non-white face in it, who he then denigrated as Makaka.
Yeah, yeah. He's neat.
And you gotta, I mean, George Allen, you know, there was the noose in his law office, the Confederate flag stuff, the commemorating the war between the states without mentioning slavery, opposing the Martin Luther King birthday, using the N-word, the allegation about putting the deer head in the black family's oversized mailbox, the Makaka thing tonight at 7:58 p.m. Eastern Time, just before primetime, on TV stations of Virginia's 4 largest TV markets, he has reserved 2 solid minutes of air.
Sunny day with tonight's AccuTerror forecast.
And folks, wasn't it just a perfect day for a terror alert? Bone chilling in the morning, clear and present danger in the afternoon, tapering off into cold sweats at night. Tomorrow, AccuTerror is predicting 100% chance of a really big terror alert to take our mind off bad economic news. An Al-Qaeda cell coming down from Canada into here, the Great Lakes region for folks in the Detroit and Saginaw. You might want to put on that extra layer of Kevlar. Our exclusive AccuTerror radar is picking up a lot of chatter out here in the Denver area, so stay away from chemical plants, nuclear facilities, and, of course, the French fries at Arby's. Here in the West, some light showers of ammonium nitrate, a little sarin gas are possible in the Los Angeles area, but don't expect loss of life. The Santa Anas are going to push all that nasty gunk out. Here's your 5-day. Yellow, bluish yellow, yellow again, yellow gradually becoming orange, and orange back into yellow. And we've got an orangish red weekend on tap, so be sure to have plenty of bottled water and canned goods on hand. And that's fair. All right, make it a great day.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320. Listening to AM 1320 KCTC.
Sacramento.
Sacramento's left channel. Because you deserve the truth.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney.
It's a horrendous
crime scene.
It's a one-room Amish schoolhouse in southeast Pennsylvania where a man with guns, knives, wooden boards, tools, and hardware barricaded himself inside this morning.
There was practically no way we could get in quickly through any of the doors. I mean, he had taken extreme measures to fortify this location, and it seems to us that perhaps he was preparing for a lengthy siege.
State Police Commissioner Jeffrey Miller says 32-year-old Charles Roberts, who drove a milk delivery truck, held more than 20 people at gunpoint. After a while, he let the boys and several women leave, but kept 11 girls with him and started shooting when troopers tried to break in. More from KYW Radio's Tony Hansen.
EMT John Stoltzfus was among the first responders.
First thing I saw was the girls were on the stretchers. And they obviously had gunshot wounds to the head. There was also one that was covered up.
State police say bound victims were shot execution style inside the one-room schoolhouse. Once the gunman entered, there was nowhere to hide.
Three of the girls are dead. The other eight are hospitalized in critical condition, and Commissioner Miller says some might not make it. Roberts took his own children to their school bus stop this morning, leaving suicide notes for them to find later.
He was angry. He was angry with life. He was angry at God. Things like that. He wrote the notes to the kids that he was angry, and, you know, that's what brought him to this point.
In a brief phone call to his wife, Roberts said he was taking revenge for something that happened 20 years ago. It hasn't been explained. Four public schools in North Las Vegas were locked down for several hours after a teenager with a gun was spotted near Mojave High School. Authorities say he's a former student who'd been banned from the campus. He fled. A gun was later found nearby behind a church. The suspect is still at large. The FBI and the state of Florida are launching investigations into former Congressman Mark Foley and his emails to congressional pages. Republican leaders are doing their best to distance themselves from the scandal.
While House Speaker Dennis Hastert again strongly condemned Foley and said he deceived everyone, he refused to take questions about what Republican leaders knew and when they knew it. A question put bluntly by Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi, who asked if they chose partisan politics over protecting children. Hastert is adamant they never knew about the most sexually explicit instant messages, but has acknowledged they knew enough to ask Foley to stop communicating with former pages.
CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss. Behind the scenes, political correspondent Gloria Borger says there's deep concern.
One senior House Republican tells CBS News that this scandal could be the congressional equivalent of Katrina. Our base is moral conservatives, and we look like a bunch of hypocrites who just didn't want another scandal before the election.
Foley has checked himself into alcohol rehab, leaving behind a statement saying he deeply regrets and accepts full responsibility for the harm he's caused. The Dow, 8 points lower today. The Nasdaq lost 20. This is CBS News.
Need a new roof? The Home Depot can solve your roofing problems with Timberland Shingles from GAF, North America's number one roof. And in most areas, our home services experts can even install your new roof. Call 1-800-HOME-DEPOT today. The Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. See store for license numbers.
You know when you open a birthday card from Grandma? She's usually good for, what, like $5? Well, now imagine that you have 100 grandmas. It feels like that.
Have you ever gotten out of your car and something catches your eye on the ground? You walk over and find a $5 bill? Okay, now pretend you find a $495 bill next to it. It's just like that.
New GEICO customers report average annual savings of $500 on their car insurance. Discover how it feels and how much you could save. Go to GEICO.com. Simple as that.
Need a new roof? The Home Depot can solve your roofing problems with Timberland Shingles from GAF, North America's number one roof. And in most areas, our home services experts can even install your new roof. Call 1-800-HOME-DEPOT today. The Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. See store for license numbers.
We all make mistakes, but we hope our doctors won't make many. CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato reports on a new study of medical mistakes.
With all the patients and illnesses that doctors see, why are there so many misdiagnoses? That's what Boston researcher Tejal Gandhi set out to find in a study in the Annals of Internal Medicine.
Most were caused by multiple breakdowns and involved multiple doctors or clinicians.
In 8 of 10 cases, doctors made bad judgments. Half the time, they failed to order the right test or follow up properly. This study focused on malpractice claims, so these mistakes were serious.
Two-thirds of the errors in diagnosis that we did find involved a missed cancer, and in particular, breast and colorectal cancer were the top two cancers that were missed.
Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
Another study finds that about a third of American teenagers fail treadmill tests that measure heart and respiratory health. Researchers blame obesity and sedentary lifestyles and say it's a significant public health problem. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
New rule.
Jewish people have to start... The Jewish population in America dropped 5% in the last decade, which may explain why this country's finances have gone to... Breed, you sons of Abraham, breed! We need you. Israel needs you. Kobe Bryant, Robert Blake, and Phil Spector need you. Without Jews, who's going to write all those sitcoms about blacks and Hispanics? New rule. Living in a box for 6 weeks doesn't make you a magician, it makes you homeless.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320. The best of Politically Direct on Air America Radio.
The Majority Report with Janine Garofalo and Sam Cedar.
Hi, how are you? Listen, in about a minute, David Bender is going to come out here and start his new nightly show, Politically Direct, in the erstwhile Majority Report time slot. I need to talk very quickly before he walks in the studio. Here's the deal. He's a very nice guy. I know him. I have worked with him. But I don't think there's any way he's going to be able to pull this off. Therefore, I just want everybody to know that I am only a phone call away, and so is Sam. And actually, we're both walking distance from the studio. So when David Bender's show goes the way of the horse and buggy, I can cover a night or two. Sam can cover more than a night or two. I mean, hell, he's up with the baby anyway, so.
Janine?
David, what's going on? I was just saying that it's a shame that your show is only an hour. You know what? You should have like 3 hours like Sam and I used to have.
Janine, I heard the whole thing. I mean, I heard everything you said.
You did?
Yeah, and I have to tell you, I didn't really appreciate it.
Well, you know what? You might want to take that up with Sam. Sam said he was so sure you'd screw this up. And not, I don't think that. I'm just telling you, I'm just a vessel for Sam's words. He believed you're going to screw it up. And he instructed me to warn the audience that that may be a real possibility.
I talked to Sam this morning. He couldn't have been more supportive. My God, he even sent a tape for us to play tonight. Dave, can you play that tape Sam sent?
3, 2, 1. You're on, Sam.
Hey, welcome to the Majority Report. Filling in for Janine and I tonight, and maybe for the rest of the week, we'll see how it goes, is David Bender. Now, I want you guys to cut him a lot of slack because, quite frankly, he's pretty shaky behind the microphone. In fact, to be totally honest with you, I don't really expect him to pull this off. But then, hey, he's got some impossibly big shoes to fill, doesn't he? And I'm not talking literally. I'm talking specifically metaphorically. So, although I don't want you to get the wrong idea, I have big shoes. I have big feet as well. But I'm talking metaphorically here. So what I'm saying is that when you get bored with Bender, and you will, you can switch over to the podcast of this morning's Sam Cedar Show, heard daily right here on Air America Radio Network. That's the Sam Cedar Show, 9 to 12 noon. Of course, if you're podcasting, it's irrelevant when I did it. So good luck tonight, Dave, and don't let them give away your weekend slot.
Huh. Okay, well, that was great. And Janine, you know, I just can't find the words to tell you how I feel about you stopping by here on my first night.
No problem, David. Listen, really, anytime. I am just a phone call away.
Yeah, so I've heard. Well, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, assuming I'm still here, you're going to be listening to the first broadcast of the new Nightly Politically Direct here on Air America Radio. I'm David Bender. No flipping, right, Janine?
I don't get it.
That unfamiliar sound is...
This is an AM 1320 left channel action calendar. Help preserve open space in our region by attending the Sacramento Valley Conservancy's annual Treasures of the Valley event on Thursday, October 5th from 5:30 to 7 p.m. at the Sacramento State Alumni Center, 6000 J Street. This fun evening spotlights local artists and includes a live and silent auction. You'll also be treated to great food, wine and beer, and jazz featuring Shake Don't Stir. Treasures of the Valley supports the Sacramento Valley Conservancy, the award-winning nonprofit land trust that is committed to preserving the beauty, character, and diversity of the Sacramento Valley landscape. That's Treasures of the Valley, Thursday, October 5th from 5:30 to 7 p.m. at the Sacramento State Alumni Center. For more information, go to SacramentoValleyConservancy.org or call 916-731-8798.
I wanted it all. Intelligence, great looks, physical strength, inner beauty, even social consciousness. Friends said that I wanted too much, but I wouldn't settle. And now, I have it all.
This woman is talking about her Renewal by Anderson replacement windows from Hall's Window Center. If it looks better, lasts longer, and outperforms the competition, it's gotta be Anderson. The only windows and doors to receive Green Seal certification for energy efficiency and environmentally friendly manufacturing. Now you too can have it all. For a limited time, get 7 Renewal by Anderson windows and 1 Anderson PermaShield patio door from Hall's Window Center for just $69.95. Left channel listeners save an extra $150. Go to HallsWindowCenter.com. Click on the green seal for your coupon. Visit Hall's Window Center today on Business Park Drive in Sacramento and now in Roseville on Roseville Parkway next to BJ's. Call 1-800-76-HALLS. SMUD financing available. Some restrictions apply. Offer ends September 30th.
This is an AM 1320 left channel action calendar. Help preserve open space in our region by attending the Sacramento Valley Conservancy's annual Treasures of the Valley event on Thursday, October 5th from 5:30 to 7 p.m. at the Sacramento State Alumni Center, 6000 J Street. This fun evening spotlights local artists and includes a live and silent auction. You'll also be treated to great food, wine and beer, and jazz featuring Shake Don't Stir. Treasures of the Valley supports the Sacramento Valley Conservancy, the award-winning nonprofit land trust that is committed to preserving the beauty, character, and diversity of the Sacramento Valley landscape. That's Treasures of the Valley, Thursday, October 5th from 5:30 to 7 p.m. at the Sacramento State Alumni Center. For more information, go to SacramentoValleyConservancy.org or call 916-731-8798.
Politically Direct with David Bender. David's guests today are former Senator John Edwards and author Gore Vidal.
I would live like a free man.
You're listening to the best of Politically Direct on Air America Radio.
Change my direction to heal my reflection. Stepping out into the cold.
Welcome to the program. I'm particularly delighted to welcome as my first guest on this new broadcast of Politically Direct, former North Carolina Senator John Edwards. Senator Edwards was the 2004 Democratic vice presidential nominee, and he's now the director of the Center on Poverty, Work, and Opportunity at the UNC Law School in Chapel Hill. Senator Edwards, thanks very much for being with us here tonight on our very first broadcast.
I'm glad to be with you on your first broadcast, and congratulations on it.
Well, thank you. I'm particularly impressed, I have to say, that you have taken the campaign that you and Senator Kerry waged, and you have continued it and focused your visibility and your efforts on poverty in America. And as we've seen, it's been an issue that has stayed under the radar probably since Robert Kennedy in the 60s. There really hasn't been a national effort to address this issue, and you've brought it to the forefront.
Well, I don't know if I deserve that credit. What I'm trying to do is get the country to focus on this moral issue, deal with it in a serious way. And we're doing a lot of work at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill at the Poverty Center we have there that I'm directing on trying to create some new ideas about how to fight poverty, but this is the cause of my life these days, and I'm very proud of what we're doing.
Senator, I've heard you talk about the difficulty of being in the spotlight and trying to maintain a genuine quality to the dialogue. I heard a very interesting discussion. You were at something called Gnome Dex recently, and someone asked you about how is it possible not to go into autopilot when you give answers. And I've been struck by the fact that you really make an effort to be present in the moment. It's very rare in public life. Is it a hard thing to do this?
It's extremely hard to do. And I've become really conscious of it over the last couple of years, and for a reason, by the way, which I'll come to in a minute. But to answer your question, you know, politicians, particularly those who are in a national spotlight, are conditioned to behave a certain way. You're conditioned to stay on message. You're conditioned to be robotic. Because the belief is anything outside that is undisciplined and not trying to accomplish your political goals. I think actually that old way of thinking is dead wrong. What the country actually wants, I think, today is they want somebody that's, they want their leaders, they want someone real, someone who's authentic. But I can tell you, I catch myself, and I'm very conscious of it. You know, I speak a lot, and I can literally be in the middle of my speech and hear myself go in my head, go into my reel. And when I do it, I shut it off, and I go back to just talking about what I feel inside. And there's no question about what people want and what's more effective, even if they don't agree with me. They want to know what I actually think, but it's a hard thing to do.
Well, your campaign advisors, I'm sure, shudder at this.
Oh, they hate it. They hate it. May scares them to death because everything's supposed to be strategic and in your interest. And in, it's the old Washington way of thinking about things, and I just think it's wrong. If people feel that, let's take the calls that I'm spending my time on these days, which is poverty. If people listen to me talk about this and they sense that this is something that comes from inside me, that I'm genuine and passionate about it, it's infectious. If they think that it's something that I've figured out what I'm supposed to say, I'm saying it, I'm being very careful about how I say it, then they just shut off. They feel like they're being sold and they quit listening. I think it's a really important thing, but it's in honesty, it's not an easy thing to do.
In fact, this has been, and I've been in politics since Robert Kennedy's campaign in 68, Senator, and I've watched this process happen. And it's some of the same people, the Roger Ailes's, who packaged Richard Nixon back in 68. That's what they've been doing, the selling of the president. And the selling of our candidates, like a bar of soap, has reduced our dialogue to those, the very sound bites and those loops that our candidates are on. Now, I guess my question is a larger one. You're doing it. You're trying to self-edit and make the effort. But how do you change the process? Because this process, I saw you talking about this, where, you know, you're surrounded by cameras, you're surrounded, and they're throwing questions at you every minute. You're trying to play it safe. You're a football player. You're trying to go for, you know, short yardage. How do you stay out of the box? How do you do that in a process that makes people robotic?
There are two dynamics that make people cynical about politicians and make politicians behave the way they do, which are what you just described. You know, you're surrounded by media constantly. They're hitting you with rapid-fire, hard questions. And somehow, if you don't have a practiced answer, the feeling is that you may screw up. You may make a mistake. And then the second thing is that all the people who work with you every day, they feel on safer, more secure ground if you're just saying the same thing over and over, and all you say is what you've practiced to say. The problem with all that, of course, is people don't find out who you are. They don't see their leaders as human beings. They see them as little figures. They don't think they're being honest and real with them. It feeds the cynicism of politics, along with money and all the other things, that, and lobbying and so forth, that creates cynicism. And I think that the answer is, and I can't honestly tell you that I'm going to be able to do it. I don't know. But I think the answer is to have somebody come through the process who represents real, authentic, honest, and they're successful. And they change the model. Right now, the model is disciplined, packaged, plastic, robotic. And I think for that to change, some national figure has to be successful doing something different. And then all of a sudden, everyone will be on that bandwagon, and I think it has the potential to change politics in a serious way in this country. But as I say before, it's not an easy thing, and it'll be interesting to see whether it's possible.
I saw you suggest that possibly one way of doing this would be to give full access, almost like a reality show, to a candidacy, and not quite 24/7, but warts and all, to see the candidate close up throughout everything, sort of a C-SPAN version of an entire campaign. Would you be willing to give that experiment a chance?
Yeah, because I think that's what's hard about this is, in addition to all the things we just talked about, is that we're all imperfect. God, Lord knows, I've got as many flaws as anybody and many problems as anybody. And when somebody sees you all the time, they see the good and the bad. They don't just see the good. And
that actually helps, though.
That's what I think. I think that Americans have enough sense to know that everybody's human. We all, and to see you, it requires, a certain level of confidence that when they actually see who you are, they're going to respond well to who you are.
Did you see the contrast, Senator, did you see the contrast between George Bush and his Oval Office address, very scripted, however partisan, and then did you see him with Matt Lauer on the Today Show? When he
no,
was actually,
I saw the speech. I didn't see the Matt Lauer.
He was pressed, and then he got uncomfortable. Then he got defensive, and you got to see he tried to give the same answers he gave that night, but he had to defend them. And that's where you see that window into who he is, and that's why people, I think, are becoming uncomfortable with him, because they see that other than when he's off message, it doesn't really work.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think the hard thing and the interesting thing will be to see how the American people respond when they get sort of a backstage view and a normal life view of people who are running for president or for vice president or serious national office. Because I think it'll be an adjustment for the country, too. But I think it's a very healthy thing. I think what's happened is people are tired of being sold. They feel like they're being sold a package. If you just listen to what people are saying, they're discouraged about politics in general. They're worried about what's happening in America and the world. They should be. They ought to be concerned about that. But I think this, by the way, if I could take it away from politicians and leaders to the country, I think you can translate this to even a bigger issue for the world, which is I think what's actually missing from what the world sees is they don't see the character of the American people. Because we have people like George Bush in the White House, all they see is the package of George Bush. What the Republican consultants want them to see. America and the world sees the same thing. And they think that reflects what the American people are. And it's, from my perspective, about as far removed from what Americans are really like as you could possibly be. And I just think the world would respond so differently to America if they see what you and I see every single day, which are our better angels. They see, you know, we're not perfect. We make mistakes, of course. But at the end of the day, most Americans are good people. They're good-hearted. They want us to do the right thing. They actually care about what's happening around the world. They're not just interested in this expansion of America's power in the world. They want to see people come to us because we're the natural moral leader in the world. Well, I think the world has to see the character of our people for that to happen.
And you've been abroad a great deal. You've been in Russia a lot, and you've seen close up how we are viewed, and certainly since George Bush has been president, and it's not pretty.
It's a very ugly thing. And what's so sad about it is it has a huge impact on our ability to lead, because you can't lead just by being strong. Just to translate this to everyday life, you know, because somebody's attractive and articulate doesn't make them a leader. What makes them a leader is people trust them. They feel like they have a conscience. They feel like what they do is the right thing most of the time. I mean, it's those qualities that give you the mantle of leadership. And you think about the consequences of this. This is not some abstract thing. I mean, the consequences are very real. We saw it recently with the fighting between the Israelis and Hezbollah in Lebanon. We see it with Iran trying to get a nuclear weapon. We see it with the de-democratization of Russia. The world should be naturally rallying around us.
We had no standing.
You got it. And my view is, I have a slightly different view than a lot of people. People want to always blame George Bush for this. I think George Bush deserves huge blame for this. But I think what he's really doing, besides proactively doing damage in places like Iraq, I think beyond that, he's masking what our people are. The world doesn't see who we are and what our real character is. And I think they have to see that. In addition to that, there's just so many high-profile things We didn't used to be the country of Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib and this, you know, and we're better than that. The United States of America is better than that, and our people are better than that.
But what you've said, and I know we're short on time, so I want to focus on this. You've said that, bringing it back to the Democratic Party, that this is a battle for the soul of the Democratic Party, whether or not we're going to take these things head on or whether we're going to play it safe and triangulate and go find some mushy center. Are you prepared to lead that fight and stop this kind of path to the center in order to find some way to win?
I'm prepared to lead in every way I know how on a principled, conviction, conscience-driven leadership for the Democratic Party. And I'm prepared to do it for a very simple reason, because I honestly believe the future of America and the future of the world is at stake. And the way I would say it in the simplest terms, there are two major political parties and the only preeminent power on the planet. One of them has been running this country for the last 6 years. Look at what we've got. Chaos. Dangerous place. Look at what kind of leadership we can provide. And if we instead, we decide we need to get closer to where the Republicans are, we need to be careful, we need to look at the polls to figure out what it is we're supposed to talk about. It's not just our party that suffers. The country suffers, and at the end of the day, the world will suffer. Because if we're not leading, there is no leadership. And the only leadership right now has come from the other side, and they've been devastating.
I know you haven't made a decision yet about what you'll do in 2008, and I know you've also said you're not going to wait too much longer past these November elections because most candidacies are already gearing up. But let me ask you this threshold question. If you decide to run, will you run a very different campaign than Senator Kerry ran?
Well, first of all, I don't want to be critical of John Kerry. I have huge respect for him and admiration for him. What I can say is what I would do. And if I were to decide to run for president, I can tell you it would be based on conviction. It would be based on taking hard stances on important issues like universal health care, energy independence, America's leadership in the world, ending poverty in America, and calling on the country to be patriotic about something other than war. You know, there's so many things that the American people can be patriotic on, and I just think strength comes from conviction. Strength does not come from being mushy and soft and trying to navigate our way to the center. That's not what the country needs from us.
Senator Edwards, what you've just said, I hope, is what a lot of people are going to be hearing over the course of the next 2 years, and I hope we're going to be hearing it from you. Thank you so much for joining us on this premiere edition of Politically Direct.
Thank you so much for having me.
Good afternoon, AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel. Lisa West here with a look at the traffic and the weather. Well, our weather tonight, a little rain, a little precipitation. We're going to see it the next couple of days. We saw some this weekend. I kind of liked it. It felt really good. High 70 tomorrow, and Enid Live will continue tomorrow, so keep it on her. You can log on to 1320leftchannel.com and give her an email if you have something to say. Westbound I-80 just west of Rockland Road, we have a vehicle in the roadway. Watt Avenue, eastbound I-80, a pedestrian is sitting on the right-hand side over the fog lane. Eastbound 50 just west of 84, three-car crash southbound 99 just north of 12th Avenue. 99 at Sheldon, Consumnis, Elk Grove Boulevard. And, oh, it looks like we have one at Laguna Boulevard, too. A couple of crashes along there slowing traffic down.
It's the most...
At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cache Fever Jackpot. Jackpots start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cache Fever jackpot hits, a Cache Club player wins just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cache Fever jackpot total and your Cache Club points online now at CacheCreek.com. So join Cache Club today and get the fever. Cache Creek Casino Resort.
AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel, and Freedom from War invite you to take part in a week of education and entertainment. The first annual Week of Peace is Sunday, October 1st through Saturday, October 7th. The week includes daily events, including a Peace Awards dinner, the screening of the extraordinary film Beyond Treason, a panel discussion on peace featuring congressional candidates, a jazz mixer, and more. The Week of Peace is a unique opportunity to explore with others the realization of a world of nonviolence, peace, and social justice. For more information, log on to freedomfromwar.org or go to the events page at 1320leftchannel.com. Find out how you can purchase a passport to all of the events with your $50 donation going to your favorite peace organization. So join AM 1320 Sacramento's Left Channel and Freedom from War and stand up for peace by taking part in Peace Week, October 1st through October 7th.
Things were looking a little grim last week. All those countries pressuring us to call for an immediate ceasefire. But we stayed strong. Our president understands what's at stake here. The rapture. Anyone who's read the Revelation knows Jesus ain't coming back till there's a war in the Middle East. But once Jesus does come back, boy, folks, is he going to be upset. Why? Because last Tuesday, former Christian coalition leader Ralph Reed lost his bid to become the Republican nominee for lieutenant governor of Georgia. Ralph Reed helped build a mighty Republican Christian machine that swung the country for George Bush in 2000 and 2004. He's the embodiment of Christian values, like love thy neighbor. Ralph's neighbor is Jack Abramoff. And when he came upon Abramoff on the side of the road, Ralph did what any good Samaritan would do. He took $4 million of an Indian tribe's money and gave it to an anti-gambling Christian group to shut down a competing tribe's casino.
Laughing at the truth.
Now, the best of politically direct on Air America Radio.
Back. Joining me now is one of America's greatest men of letters and perhaps our nation's most astute political observer, Gore Vidal. Welcome to Politically Direct here on our first evening broadcast. Thank you for joining us.
Very happy to be politically direct.
We are heading into what may well be another train wreck of an election. Right now, the Democratic Party seems to be in the driver's seat, but again, the illusion is that anyone is driving an election that might in fact be decided by people who are not voting. I want to talk to you about several aspects of it. You have, just for those listeners who don't know, you have, as part of your extraordinary resume, two candidacies. You were a candidate for Congress in New York in 1960 and a candidate for the U.S. Senate in California in 1982. So you've seen elections both as a participant and as an observer. Has this system ever been as suspect as it is today?
No. And we have Messrs. Diebold and S&S and Triad. These are the companies that make electronic balloting machinery. which can be hacked by a child of five, and often is, this system. So we never know. I mean, they say, get out the vote, get out the vote. Well, a lot of people are going to say, what's the point? Because my vote is not going to be registered. Either they'll find, if I'm in Florida or Ohio, that I haven't been registered. Or if I'm a Democrat in those places, the votes won't be counted. They'll be found in the back of the polling booth a year or two later.
People take the machines home with them.
Indeed they do. I wish they'd take all of them home and throw them away. It's something dreadful has been added to what was by no means a perfect system of calculating the vote. But at the moment, Maryland is going crazy. They had a big statewide primary recently.
Just a week ago.
A week ago with the Diebold machines. Diebold is under investigation from several sources. And everything went haywire. The votes, it wasn't that the election was being cheated. It was just non-existent due to the incompetence of these machines. And this is all playing into the hands of the oil and gas junta that has currently seized power.
I took the word that's out of my mouth, the ruling junta. But there comes a point at which you would think, after several cycles of this, after we've seen it in 2000, 2002, 2004, that people are going to see this in advance before going to the polling places. Is there nothing, and I guess I always try and look at this from the glass half full, is there anything now, knowing what we know, that people can do before this election happens to put a spotlight on it, prevent this from happening in November?
Well, now is the time. As we speak, people should be examining, just ordinary citizens, but interested in good elections, honest elections, should be examining the machines. I don't know how you get at them. They're highly guarded until election day, and then the voters march through. They cast their votes, which can be promptly changed around by interested parties. And that's how Mr. Bush won officially the presidency twice, with the right numbers in the wrong order.
You have had the greatest descriptors to our chief executives that I've ever come across. You used to refer to Ronald Reagan as the old television president, and you now refer to this President Bush as the little president.
Well, I'm a wartime president, wartime president, wartime president. Just quack, 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 quack. And why it is, I think first he probably doesn't believe it that he is president, because he knew that between him and the actual presidency were the American voters.
Sure.
They don't like him. And they're registering in an off year like this that they dislike him. If you remember, in 2000, Albert Gore ran a couple of 100,000 votes ahead of him in the popular vote.
Did indeed.
And was indeed elected president. But the Supreme Court, in its wisdom, decided that it owed more to party loyalty to the Republican Party than it did to justice and to the American people and to the Constitution, which they have sworn to preserve, protect, and defend. So they gave it to Bush. And Gore didn't fight it, which was a huge mistake. Should have asked for a recount in all of Florida. He could have got it. And he'd be president today. No, it's when everything has been corrupted, and I'm one who believes when the glass is not only full but overflowing with horror, we better say it. Frank Rich has a very good piece on as this war lengthens, the lies get bigger. I mean, there is no shame about telling them. We're still being told by Cheney that Saddam Hussein was very close to Osama bin Laden. And these are whoppers. And where are the people? Where's the media? The president has just told a lie. There's nothing wrong with a voiceover saying that. We have the proof right here. But they won't do it, because there are all kinds of means of taking revenge.
Save for a few, and Keith Olbermann is one who actually called out the president on the anniversary of 9/11 and Cheney, saying flat out that they've been lying about it every step of the way.
And then they say, oh, we don't want to politicize the election. There is nothing that they don't politicize. All they can think about is keeping their hands on the Treasury. And that is done through appointing their cronies as head of FEMA, as head of this, as head of that. And it's almost as if, and they get a kick out of it. Okay, I can hear them talking. Now, who's the worst person to send to the UN? Somebody who really hates it. And they get Mr. Bolton, and he just hates it.
Didn't he say something about how it would be better off if several of the floors were just taken out of the
building? Oh, yes, and some of the ambassadors as well, if I were in charge. And he would be the first to go. He has no business in that job anyway. But that's the kind of beauty of it. No one has any competence in anything except falsifying election returns and lying to the people, misinformation, which they're terribly good at.
So their great skill is in propaganda and manipulation and perpetuation. You've said, I think, that one of the few things that America has successfully offered to the world is advertising and the advertising industry. And these people are the quintessence of that, aren't they?
Of course they are. And also, the whole country is trained from birth, is brainwashed from birth by advertising techniques. The first thing a child learns are TV commercials. And for a long time, it was policy and advertising agencies, because I used to write plays in live television. And I got to talk to a lot of the guys from various firms. And they said, yeah, one of the tricks is we get nursery rhymes like Rinso White, Rinso White. The children already know or can easily learn. Then we repeat the message over and over again until they drive their parents crazy.
And buy the product.
And buy the product. Or if they don't buy the product, they think about it all the time. That's successful advertising. Then somebody said, let's use the same techniques in politics.
And in fact, it's that repetition which Bush et al. Have been using on this war, that, you know, it's cut and run Democrats.
Cut and run. I love it. Bush, who's had no experience, to be polite, with the military of any kind, being what I call the Yellow Rose of Texas, and he has wisely stayed away from any action that might hurt him, but he loves military vernacular. Cut and run. Oh, God, he's so happy because it's easy, too, for him to say it. Most things are very, very difficult.
But he's one of those kids who watched those commercials growing up and probably bugged Barbara Bush to buy all the products because he could repeat those things over and over. The legend is that she was still using flashcards with him when he was in 7th or 8th grade.
Really? What a wonderful mother. I never saw that side to her. She looks like a Madonna, you know, but well, that's just wonderful.
Madonna and child, there's an image. We're talking with Gore Vidal on Politically Direct. We need to take a quick break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
It's the Randy Rhoads Show.
1920 Left Channel Action Calendar. The film company Shiny Object, in conjunction with Fools Foundation Art Gallery at 19th and K Streets in Sacramento, presents an ongoing weekly series of film screenings of independent films, documentaries, and some LGBT interest titles on Friday nights at 7 p.m. Coming Friday, October 13th, Independent America, The Two-Lane Search for Mom and Pop. This film uncovers the growing opposition to big box retail across the U.S. and the often desperate fight being waged by independent retailers to stay alive. Award-winning journalists and filmmakers Hanson Hossein and Heather Hughes travel through 32 states looking for an American unchained by corporate retail and find individuals banding together to preserve not only their livelihoods, but also the life of their communities. Independent America, The Two-Lane Search for Mom and Pop, on Friday, October 13th at 7 p.m. at the Fools Foundation Art Gallery, 19th and K Streets. Admission is $5. More information is on the events page at 1320leftchannel.com.
New rule. You don't get to do a farewell tour unless you absolutely, positively swear you'll go away. This goes for Cher, Michael Jordan, and if the Eagles reform one more time, I'm going to stab them with my steely knives until I just can kill the beast. New rule. Stop leaving messages on my answering machine saying it's me. I already have a me in my life, me. And frankly, if we were that close, I'd have given you the number to the phone that I answer. All right, ready, new rule number one. Enough with gaysploitation TV. Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. Hey, if I want a bunch of gay men in queenie outfits telling me how to live my life, I'll go back to Mass.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
Where, as it was in 94 for the Republicans, where Democratic candidates have a chance at taking back either the House or the Senate?
Oh, if it's an honest election, unhacked, yes, they certainly can get the House back. And there's a long shot they could get the Senate back. But to look at this without scandal, I would say probably the best bet to be elected in 08 as president would be, despite her baggage, would be Hillary Clinton. She's got the most money, apparently. And she's bad on the war and is not forgiven by many people. But in the long run, we have got to get rid of this gang before this gang gets rid of the American Republic entirely. And it's already half gone. It's going to take 50-100 years to get back to where we were before the year 2000. They have wrecked the Bill of Rights. They have wrecked the voting system, allowed it to become tyrannical. And they've established tyranny. I'm now quoting Aristotle, as your Greek-loving listeners will notice. And tyranny is something to be feared. The Founding Fathers certainly saw it as a possibility for us. If we had bad people at the helm, we have bad people, and tyranny is just around the corner. I think also, let's finish with, if we had an honest electoral system, I would think the obvious candidate that nobody has thought of, because it's sort of obvious, is the one who won in 2000, Albert Gore. He's got the only issue that matters. And he has it genuinely. He isn't acting it out, rehearsing in front of a mirror. He wants to save the planet, and he has some plans, actual plans. Saving the planet, nothing else matters. If the planet goes, you know, that's the end. And he's got a firm grip on that issue. Nobody can take it away from him. Nobody else would know what to do with it. And he has the information. The people are extremely interested in weather now. All my life I've thought the one thing I cannot stand on radio or on television is the weather.
Everybody talks about it, but now someone wants to do something about
it. Yes, indeed. And if they don't do something about it, there may be no more weather or no more us to worry about it. So I would think that he would have a very good crack at it, just ideally speaking. I don't know if he can raise money anymore.
I think he can. I think he can raise money on the Internet, actually.
Yeah, I suppose so.
We talked about Hillary Clinton as the presumptive front runner in 2008. She has the money, obviously. She has, within the Democratic Party, a huge core of support. But in your view, can she build upon that? There are those who say that her nomination is prescription for disaster in the general election.
Well, I know why they say it, because when she selflessly, possibly foolishly, came out with the health care changes at the beginning of the Clinton administration, she was put in charge of that. She had the entire pharmaceutical business against her, elements of the AMA, and vested interests in health care throughout the United States. Ours is the worst for the average person of any first world country. And she was trying to make sense of it, and she was trying to extend it for its coverage for everybody. Instead of embracing her, they started... Republicans will never spend a penny on having a good health care system. They don't want one. They wish everybody in the country would die anyway, so they couldn't go to the polls. So they don't like the people very much, and they don't want to do anything for them.
But they spent a lot of money to beat her plan.
Yeah, because that really would have done something active for all the people, gain her a lot of credit and make her presidential. It was more important to smear her and have no health care for everybody, which was her basic intention. And I would think any good president, any good statesman would want to do that.
Earlier in this broadcast, when we were speaking with Senator John Edwards, he said flat out, anyone running, and that would include his candidacy should he run, has to stop being mealy-mouthed about health care. They have to say it's not about making it more accessible, more affordable, or tinkering around the edges. He said very clearly, you have to be for universal health care or get out of the way. Now, given that that was, in essence, where Hillary Clinton was going, in hindsight, will she look better to people for having taken that position early on?
Well, you know, the gun that shoots you down, you can also use to shoot the would-be assassin down. You know, she could fire back.
Gore Vidal, unfortunately, our time is up. But as always, it's a pleasure and a joy to have you on this broadcast. And I'd love to have you back. You're going to have a book out in November, right around, I believe it's being released on Election Day. It's called Point to Point Navigation. It's a memoir.
It's a memoir of the last 40 years of my life. The first volume was Palimpsest, which was the first 40 years.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having it.
And that's our show for tonight. Our first show in our new home is part of Air America's daily lineup. I want to say a special thanks to Janine Garofalo and Sam Cedar for their gracious good humor in welcoming me to what, for the last 2 years, has been part of their Majority Report time slot. The Majority Report was part of Air America's original broadcast lineup, and this network owes a debt of thanks to Janine and Sam, whose originality, passion, and commitment to social justice informed and inspired all of us. I know their nighttime listeners will miss them greatly. And Janine, I truly hope that you're only a phone call away. As for Sam, I personally don't plan on ever trying to fill his shoes, because as it happens, Sam, my feet are a lot bigger than yours. But quite seriously, we're very lucky at Air America that Sam is continuing on as the host of his new eponymous morning show. His has become an invaluable progressive voice that we'll be hearing a lot more from in the months and years to come. And that's a damn good thing for Air America, as well as for the country. I also want to give special thanks to my extraordinary guests on this, our first show, Senator John Edwards and Gore Vidal. I hope you'll support Senator's efforts to fight poverty in America by logging onto his website, oneamericacommittee.com. And as for Gore Vidal, a true American treasure, I can only say this. If Mount Rushmore ever does expand, he's certainly my candidate for the next opening. And of course, I need to thank you, our loyal listeners, as well as our new friends who may be hearing Politically Direct for the first time tonight, for joining us on this new broadcast. I hope you'll give me your thoughts, your advice, and your support by logging onto our blog at politicallydirectradio.com. The newest member of our Politically Direct team, Colin Pfeiffer, will be posting there every day, and I'll be dropping in from time to time as well. And finally, if you thought John Edwards and Gore Vidal would be tough to top, I hope you'll tune in tomorrow when my guest will be one of the greatest men of the 20th century, and now the 21st, Archbishop Desmond Tutu of South Africa. I'm David Bender. This is Politically Direct. We'll see you tomorrow.
AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel, and Freedom from War invite you to take part in a week of education and entertainment. The first annual Week of Peace is Sunday, October 1st through Saturday, October 7th. The week includes daily events, including a Peace Awards dinner, the screening of the extraordinary film Beyond Treason, a panel discussion on peace featuring congressional candidates, a jazz mixer, and more. The Week of Peace is a unique opportunity to explore with others the realization of a world of nonviolence, peace, and social justice. For more information, log on to freedomfromwar.org or go to the events page at 1320leftchannel.com. Find out how you can purchase a passport to all of the events with your $50 donation going to your favorite peace organization. So join AM 1320 Sacramento's Left Channel and Freedom from War and stand up for peace by taking part in Peace Week, October 1st through October 7th.
Listening to AM 1320 KCTC, Sacramento's Left Channel. Left Channel. And streaming live at 1320leftchannel.com.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. It started as a beautiful fall day in the Amish town of Nickel Mine, Pennsylvania.
You wonder how it can happen in a village like Nickel Mine.
Tonight, millions of Americans are wondering the same thing. Why did a man armed with guns, knives, tools, and equipment barricade himself inside a one-room schoolhouse and shoot 11 Amish girls before taking his own life? Three of the children died, eight are in critical condition, and State Police Commissioner Jeffrey Miller is trying to get inside Charles Roberts' head.
This was a premeditated hostage scenario where I believe, based on what the investigators have so far, he intended to not to walk out of there alive, but he also intended to kill innocent victims.
Miller says Roberts left notes for his family and in a phone call to his wife said he was taking revenge for something that happened 20 years ago.
I'm Mark Noller, traveling with the president. A spokeswoman describes Mr. Bush as deeply saddened and troubled by the latest school shootings and by other recent episodes of school violence. Reporters aboard Air Force One were told the president directed his attorney general and education secretary to examine what the federal government can do to stop such incidents from happening.
Mr. Bush is in Reno for a Republican fundraiser. House Speaker Dennis Hastert says he doesn't remember hearing before last Friday about inappropriate emails Congressman Mark Foley sent to congressional pages.
I have known him for all the years he's served in this House,
and he deceived me, too.
Today, Hastert called for investigations of the Florida Republican who resigned from the House as the story was about to break. CBS News correspondent Cheryl Atkinson notes that Foley co-chaired a congressional caucus on missing and exploited children.
Irony of ironies, Mark Foley could find himself prosecuted under the very law he helped write. It's called the Adam Walsh Child Protection Act. Among other things, the new law makes it harder for sexual predators to reach out to children on the Internet, just what Foley is suspected of doing in a series of sexually explicit email exchanges with teenage congressional pages.
Foley has checked himself into rehab for what he describes as alcohol and emotional difficulties. Murder charges have been filed in a fragging attack in Iraq. CBS News correspondent Jim Krasula reports.
Commanders at Fort Bragg here in North Carolina have decided to court-martial a National Guardsman from New York. Staff Sergeant Alberto Martinez is accused of killing two superior officers in Iraq in June of last year. The incident came after he was relieved of his duties as a supply sergeant.
AM 1320 Sacramento's Left Channel invites you to the 5th Annual Voters Education and Candidates Forum 2006 at the Radisson on Saturday, October 7th from 1 p.m. to 5:30. This free event presented by the Asian Pacific Islander American Public Affairs Association is your opportunity to hear candidates running for office, including a debate between California Lieutenant Governor Hopefuls John Garamendi and Tom McClintock. Also expect a lively debate on the downtown sports arena issue between supporters including Daryl Steinberg and foes like Assemblymember Dave Jones.
You can also win one of two $1,000 cash raffle prizes for taking a day off from work to vote.
Be an informed voter. Join 1,000 other interested citizens at this year's Voter Education and Candidates Forum 2006 at the Radisson on Saturday, October 7th from 1 to 5:30 p.m. More information is at APAPA.org. That address again is APAPA.org.
Nobody sells more real estate than RE/MAX. Each office independently owned and operated.
Save now at
Good afternoon, Lisa West here for traffic and weather from the left. We do have some breaking stories. Let me tell you the weather tonight, low 50, highs coming up 70, 69. An engineer at Rancho Seco Nuclear Power Plant has been charged with sending threatening letters containing a powdery substance to the El Dorado Hills Country Club. That's where President Bush will appear with on Tuesday at the Republican campaign event. Michael LeBron, 51, was arraigned Monday in U.S. District Court in Sacramento on two federal charges of sending threats through the mail containing the powdery substance. These threats are for President Bush, Vice President Dick Cheney, and U.S. Representative John Doolittle at R. Rockland as well, according to a statement from the FBI. Bush is scheduled to appear at the Country Club Tuesday afternoon in a campaign event for Doolittle, who represents a heavily Republican district near Sacramento. You can log on to 1320leftchannel.com and get more information.
Is the same one adults have.
A lot of American kids are not sufficiently involved in regular and vigorous physical activity.
And the evidence is kids who are not fit are likely to become unfit adults, which we all know leads to health problems. John Harchi, CBS News, Washington.
There's new evidence that overeaters are actually addicted to food. Researchers at Brookhaven National Laboratory in New York studied the brain activity of very obese people as they were being fed. They noticed that eating fired up the same circuits that were activated when cocaine addicts get a craving for their drug. This could lead to new treatments for obesity. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Hey, listen up. What about your future? Are you unhappy with your current job? You want to make great money and get the promotion you deserve? Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to sackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's sackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, sackjobs.com is a click away. At sackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
Don't want to be an American idiot. Don't want a nation under the new media. Hey, can you hear the sound of hysteria? The subliminal mind, America.
AM 1320 Left Channel Action Calendar. You can support the Sacramento Housing Alliance and enjoy a great evening of music and humor featuring Nashville's Ansi McLean and the Trailer Park Troubadours on Sunday, October 8th at 7 p.m. at Sacramento's Crest Theater. Ansi McLean is a songwriter, storyteller, and entertainer who sings about his life in an American trailer park with his band, the Trailer Park Troubadours, a skillful assortment of musicians who play in the rootsy rock and roll tradition of their hardworking blue-collar forefathers.
Sweet talk made me love you. Prozac made me stay.
This concert is a fundraiser for the Sacramento Housing Alliance, a broad coalition of over 65 organizations. Their mission is to promote decent, affordable housing and enhanced opportunities for lower-income households through advocacy and education. Tickets are $20 and are available at the Crest Theater box office or at the Crest website. Sponsorship tickets for the VIP reception can be bought directly from SHA.
For a screening of his film, An Inconvenient Truth, and the announcement by Walmart's CEO Lee Scott of ambitious efforts by Walmart to reduce their ecological footprint. The time is ripe for a conversation with Andy Rubin, Walmart's VP of Sustainability. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll also be joined in the next segment by Ashok Gupta. He's with the Air and Energy Program, director of that program for the National Resources Defense Council. We were thrilled to hear that you had invited Al Gore, our hero this summer, many Americans' hero, for a screening of his brilliant film, An Inconvenient Truth, and that Al and Tipper Gore had dinner with the CEO, Lee Scott, and his wife afterwards. Why? Because we knew that once they all see that movie, there's no going back. What led to the decision to invite Gore to Walmart and to screen the film at the company headquarters? He didn't have to go too far from Tennessee to Arkansas.
Mm-hmm. It was really about climate. So it was the opportunity to have business leaders, in Northwest Arkansas and for suppliers together talking about climate. And that film, it's hard to see that film without seeing what is going on.
Exactly.
So that film was part of the day that we talked about what we are doing, what we can be doing, and how much more there is to go.
And did it surprise a lot of people? Because those of us who have been following these issues and even, seen Al Gore's presentation, even to us it was, because it was all brought together in a way that was so compelling and so convincing, and you see those melting glaciers that you cannot be moved. But I imagine a lot of folks who work for Walmart, in fact, many folks in the country, just really weren't aware of all these realities.
I think that's exactly right. And we also had, about 150 senior executives from different suppliers. And these are large Fortune 50 companies. And the emails that have come, the email chains that I've seen go by since the event, not only were people in Walmart moved, but, the ability of people who were there to take that back to their companies and comments, that people might not have realized really what was going on, or a second part about what business can be doing to be addressing things today.
Now, I want to talk about, what's gone on before this and step back a bit. Maybe we can get back to Al Gore's talk, which is very interesting. I read some excerpts. It almost sounds like a revival, and people were, had tears in their eyes and standing ovation, which, happened in San Francisco with a group of Sierra Club members and guests. But, Walmart, that's something different. So where did this begin? Where did Walmart's commitment to sustainability begin? And, of course, there's many cynics who say, well, they had to do something, to get some good PR. And there's many, many cynical people out there. But we've been watching what you're doing. Many have. And it seems genuinely sincere, and given your huge imprint and footprint, it has to make a difference. And as I said before we started taping, there's no going back. Once you know too much, well, you got to change.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And when we started, started more formally thinking about environment, it was absolutely defensive. It was a starting point. And we started to think about the ways that we do impact things, whether we know it or not, the unintended consequences. What started to happen, though, and what started to change is the more steps we took and the more support, the more opportunities that we saw as actually part of the business. And that's what's hard to not, that's what you don't go back from. And so every time you saw more of that success, and maybe we can get into some examples of what's going on, the more that you keep propelling that forward and it catches on and starts moving faster and faster.
We definitely want to get to some of the specific programs that I hope are underway, not just in the planning stages. But first, you know, you have to acknowledge your problem before you can address it. And all corporations do have an ecological footprint, institutions. I mean, we as a culture certainly have a huge one in America. So when you began to evaluate Walmart's environmental impact, what practices did you find most in need of change? And I can hear a lot of people saying, oh, where to begin? Where did you begin?
Well, I think that's right. I mean, you begin everywhere. We actually started with our own practices. So we look at things like the fleet operation, you know, as we move product to stores, the stores themselves, the efficiency of the stores, even the data servers. Then what started to happen is we started to realize that, my gosh, you know, 90% of what we're looking at is actually back up the supply chain. The fact that the packaging was produced in the first place is the bigger, and it's about 9-to-1. And we started looking at the efficiency of the manufacturing processes and all the way back to the supply chain. The part that we continue to be amazed by now is the front part of that, which is what happens in the stores. And that's kind of an even broader take on the overall footprint, which is the ability to influence consumer products, consumer awareness, and create a journey that is not our journey, it becomes a much broader journey.
What about the ability to impact your some 60,000 suppliers? I mean, that you talked about the front end, and that's really important, but you have an ability to influence your vendors as well.
Absolutely, and that's that 9-to-1. So it's about 90% of the footprint, just, you know, back to the supply chain through our stores, actually exists within the supply chain.
And what kind of response are you getting from them?
You know, for the most part, very excited. I think absolutely some people are skeptical. And then that's where it's our job to motivate and to reward those suppliers that start moving forward, that take early action, to try and cut through the greenwashing and focus on actually the principles. And then,
so you've heard that word before, greenwashing.
Absolutely.
You guys absolutely. You're pretty savvy, you know. I mean, a lot of people would just be so cynical that they would say, oh, they're just greenwashing. But obviously, if you start with that premise, expecting many folks to see it that way, you got to go deeper.
You know, one interesting, and I won't call it a benefit of the criticism, but one interesting aspect of where we sat even 2 years ago was we're not going to address things by focusing on criticism and trying to correct criticism. You know, we're going to make progress when we take a look at what we can do better, we reach out to people who can help us see more opportunity, and we start taking action.
Well, speaking of doing better, you have three very ambitious goals. One is to be supplied 100% by renewable energy. Another is to create zero waste. I got to tell you, when I started this beat 9 years ago, I went to my first zero waste conference, and I thought they were crazy, and that was way so ambitious given, you know, the amount of trash that we throw away every day here in America, and then Walmart, of course, being responsible for some of it. So that's huge. I just have to acknowledge you for taking that on. And then last but not least, to sell products that sustain our resources and our environment. That one's a little fuzzier, but the first two are really concrete and quantifiable. What's your time frame?
You know, all three of those that you mentioned, they're aspirational, and they are bold by design. So there is no way to make the progress that's possible if you don't have a bold aspiration out there. What we have, though, within each of those is we have much more near-term goals. So the 100% renewable energy, we've got a near-term goal of fleet being 25% more efficient in 2 years and doubling within 10. That's baseline last year, so that's within 9 years from now. You mentioned waste. So within 2 years from now, we'll have 25% less waste, solid waste coming from stores. And when you think about what that does at the supply chain, if we can eliminate things that currently are going into dumpsters, all of a sudden then you're having phone calls with suppliers that might include, we don't know supplier X why you're sending us this in styrofoam. We can't get any value for it. It's just going in the dumpster. And you actually start influencing processes all the way back.
And many companies, large and small, have already begun reducing waste and increasing their energy efficiency. And surprise, surprise, it does help the bottom line. Have you begun to see this happening on a Walmart scale?
Absolutely. In fact, that is one of the things that when we talk about surprises along the way, we originally thought that this is something that was going to cost money, that this was going to be a trade-off between business and the environment. And we have seen again and again and louder and louder that is anything but true. That we've seen substantial savings. This, you know, it's hard to separate this from a business opportunity, and maybe we could talk about a few examples.
Yes, right after the break, we're going to have to wrap up here for a moment, but we are going to continue this conversation with Andy Rubin. He's Walmart's Vice President of Sustainability. And after the break, we're going to be joined by the NRDC's Ashtak Gupta. He's working on their market transformation team. They actually have a Walmart team. So this is being taken seriously not only by the company of Walmart, the corporation of Walmart, but also a very serious environmental group, one of our environmental partners, NRDC. So, again, once you start these alliances, once you start these conversations, you know, there's no going back. So if I sound a little excited about this, forgive me, you real deep activists. I'm not selling out, really. I just think this is the great green hope, and it is a great big green elephant. We'll be right back.
This is the best of Eco Talk on Air America Radio. Stop Mad Cowboy Disease.
Till it's gone. It's a paradise. Put up a parking lot.
Yeah,
Yeah, but they're putting a windmill in it. Walmart, that's right. Maybe more than a windmill, maybe even a whole windmill field. We're talking to Walmart executive Andy Rubin, vice president of sustainability, and we're joined in this segment by NRDC's Ashok Gupta, who is part of the Walmart team that NRDC has assembled. What brought this about?
I think as you were discussing, we saw an opportunity. We had to gauge how serious this was, and from everything we heard and all the conversations, we realized Walmart was serious, and we felt it was our responsibility to really bring our expertise to the table and help make these goals, achieve these goals that Walmart had set, and also to make sure that the results were delivered on and that we as independent experts could help verify what happened here. So I think there were a lot of reasons to do this, and we saw this as part of our overall strategy of really bringing new solutions to the marketplace combined with policy. And we didn't see this in place of other things, but really along with the litigation we do and the policy we work we do, we thought engaging one of the largest companies in the world was important to do as well.
Now, I want to give Mr. Rubin a chance to give some specifics. Some of the ones that have impressed me is they're looking at their whole jewelry division and looking at sustainable gold. Certainly transportation is a big one in terms of improving efficiency of their huge fleet of trucks. And also packaging, which was mentioned earlier, one of my pet peeves. So maybe you can expand on each of those and tell us what else you're proud of, including your seafood program.
Absolutely. And, you know, one example that is just a question of how come this wasn't already happening is with the trucking fleets. We've got a fairly large
trucking fleet. Good question.
Yeah, it's a question we've asked more and more as we get into this. A fairly large trucking fleet, and what currently happens when you see a truck idling on the side of the road is they're running their diesel engine to idle that truck, to cool the cabin, to provide auxiliary power. There are solutions out there. We've just retrofitted our entire fleet with these auxiliary power units. It uses about one-tenth of the diesel to do that than running the engine in the front. Just on an annual basis, that change alone is 10 million gallons of diesel a year avoided, $25.5 million of savings at today's fuel prices, which, as we all know, keep going up, as well as 100,000 tons of greenhouse gas avoided. So, again, phenomenal opportunity. One of those things you look at and you say, how is it that we are not already thinking about this before? And then you mentioned others in product that are a little bit deeper, but, again, there doesn't.
I guess better late than never really comes to mind here because, again, once you connect the dots and once you see that this is of self-interest, you know, this is about preserving our human habitat, this is about our own children, our own grandchildren, our air, our water, you know, you wonder even how highly paid executives and big corporations cannot be, you know, at least thoughtful about that. This really, we're talking about this in the context of, I think, an encouraging trend, and that's seeing more and more environmental groups working more closely with more and more big companies, and there's none bigger than Walmart. I'd like to ask Ashok Gupta with the NRDC, how significant is this working with Walmart, and will this be the tipping point for this kind of collaboration?
I think it's very, very important that we use the power of markets to bring about the environmental change. I do think it is part and parcel of good policy, and we've been talking to Walmart about policies as well, and they have stepped forward in that arena. But if you look at what they're selling in their supply chain, clearly anything we can do to help improve the selling of more efficient electronic products, anything we can do in terms of how Walmart purchases electricity, or certainly, you know, their practices in terms of China, in terms of the products being produced there and the emissions impact there. So I think there's just a whole host of areas where working with Walmart to change practices as well as policies can really bring great dividends. And in the end, it's the results. It's the outcome that we're looking for. And for us, it's really having another tool in our toolkit in terms of how we get things done. So this is an important addition. We've been doing it before, but not at this scale. This just takes it to a whole different level.
Okay, we're running out of time, and I have to ask you a question, Mr. Rubin. Just, you know, how do you reconcile Walmart's basic business model, which many people would call anti-environmental just because of your size and the fact that you're selling so many consumer products that may, you know, help contribute to our hyper-consumption? How is that compatible with becoming a truly sustainable company? That's sort of the key question here.
Let me add into that with the Shope's last answer as well, is that what we see, I don't think we've ever viewed it as a model that intends to do as you characterized it. We view it as a model. We focus on doing things in a smarter way. And a lot of that, like the example we talked about, a lot of getting to those smarter practices, the smarter ways of doing business, requires a different set of eyes. And there has been nothing more important in this journey than those people who are outside the company, like Ashok and people, you know, NRDC and others, who help us see things we hadn't seen before.
And might this new awareness actually lead to some downsizing of Walmart, either the size of the stores or your expansion plans? Because let's face it, you know, just, you know, putting in stores and putting in parking lots does, you know, destroy some habitat and does have ecological impacts regardless of how green you are from the ground up.
Yeah, I actually don't know of anything that is not on the table. The idea, though, is to work within the market, not to go against the market. If we simply try and go against a consumer or societal-driven trend, customers will just shop elsewhere. So the idea is, how do you evolve that so you use the market as a source, a lever, as the show put it, of power to create change?
We're running out of time. I'd love to continue. We'll have to have you back. I'd love to hear how your customers are responding to this greening of Walmart. We've been speaking with Andy Rubin, Walmart's Vice President for Corporate Strategy and Sustainability, as well as Ashok Gupta with the NRDC, working with the Walmart team with that environmental organization. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the best of Eco Talk on Air America Radio. It's where freedom of speech.
Whining about gas prices. It's good that it costs a lot, and not just because the sales tax will help pay for our twice-a-year governor elections. It's also good if it makes you think of walking the three blocks from your house to Del Taco instead of taking the Land Cruiser. Gasoline costs a lot because we have to find it, bribe or kill the people who live on top of it. Extract it, refine it, ship it, and pump it. You'll pay $2 a gallon, and you'll like it because you know what the alternative is. Riding on the bus with poor people. New rule. Call things what they are. If your morning coffee contains crushed ice, whipped cream, and caramel, it's a milkshake.
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320.
For the latest, we're going to take you out to the Middle East, where we have team coverage of the crisis. Samantha Bee is in Beirut. Jason Jones joins us from Jerusalem. Sam, I want to start with you, Sam. Israel is talking now about actually reoccupying a swath of southern Lebanon as a buffer zone against further attacks.
That's right, John. Hezbollah is calling for the total destruction of its foe, which technically does not exist.
In their minds. Exactly. Jason, what are you hearing from the Israeli side?
Well, John, what I'm hearing is they want peace. They want to live in peace. They just need 7 to 12 more days to kill enough people to create that peace. You know, they just want to get back to a simple life in the promised land.
I see. Now, Jason...
One second, John. Hold on.
Yes, I'm sorry, Sam.
Did you just say the promised land?
The people here call it that, yes.
Well, who exactly promised it to them?
My sources here say, God.
Really? Okay, this is awkward, but my sources here tell me God promised the land to the Muslims.
No. I've interviewed dozens of Israelis, and they're pretty adamant. It's all in a book he wrote for them. Blanking on the name, but it's like their Bible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, here in southern Lebanon, they're pretty convinced God gave them the land. Hey, hold on a second. You don't think that God would have promised the same land to two different...
Oh, that two-timing son of a bitch! Oh! God, you old hound dog!
Jews and Muslims find out what God did, it is totally going to hit the fan.
Oh, for God's sake, I hope they never find out.
Excuse me, you guys.
I'm sorry, yeah, I believe we have Dan Bakadal joining us from...
Bethlehem, John.
Bethlehem, I see.
I couldn't help overhearing you, and from what I'm told, this is all part of God's plan to give it to the Christians.
He's three times?
Man, what kind of crazy whore is this guy?
Yeah, my sources tell me God never even loved those two. Yeah, he's just using them to help his son's friends.
I'm sorry, guys, is that an air raid siren? Are you guys going to be okay?
No, that's me, John. Sorry. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to have to call you back. Zeus is totally going to flip out.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. Be safe out there. Sam B., Jason Jones, Dan Bakadal, everybody. In the Middle East. Now,
laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
Back to Eco Talk. I'm your host, Betsy Rosenberg, and we're going to be speaking with someone that we checked in with last year from the Amazon rainforest in Brazil, Dr. Daniel Napstad. He's with the Woods Hole Research Center. He's been doing some research on a continuing drought and the impact of that on the rainforest that we've all heard so much about and trying in our little ways to save the rainforest. Well, there is a great discouraging news and a reason for concern, and a lot of saving is going to be needed, and it may be beyond our, well, hopefully it's not beyond our control, but this drought, which is probably climate change induced in large part, is continuing, and the consequences are pretty dire, but there are things we can do, the first of them being to educate ourselves. So thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Napstad. We changed our program lineup to get you in when we saw this story cross the wires, and we see a lot of disturbing news here at EcoTalk, but this one, I have to say, took my breath away. Tell us about what you're finding and why it is so disturbing.
Well, I've been watching the Amazon for a long time and looking at it from the point of view of how much rain it needs to survive and to get through dry seasons. And what has really bothered me in the last year or so is to see this enormous drought, which we'll talk about why it's there in a bit, but hitting not the eastern and southern part of the Amazon rainforest, where we usually see the most severe droughts, but attacking the rainforest in the far western part along the south southern end of the Andean slopes, places that we thought were pretty safe from climate change, and that's one of the things that's really been concerning to us.
Well, first of all, just a drought in a rainforest. How unusual is that, even just for a year?
Well, in a normal year, about half of the Amazon basin is subjected to a drought of anywhere from 3 to 5 months when there's only an inch or so of rain per month. What's different about this particular drought is that even the rainy season amounts of rain have been diminished, and the dry season has been more intense.
And global warming is, at least as far as you can tell, both cause and effect here. Explain that connection.
Yeah, it's hard to point to say that any particular climatic event is caused by global warming, but this particular event is consistent with the predictions of what will happen with global warming. It looks like what happened is there's been a heating of the tropical Atlantic Ocean off the coast of West Africa and over towards the Gulf of Mexico, and that just continued. That gave us last year one of the most ferocious hurricane seasons to hit North America, which cost us New Orleans. But that same heating of the surface waters of the tropical Atlantic created a big zone of high pressure sitting on top of northern South America, so that places that are usually wet virtually the entire year were suddenly faced with some very severe drought.
And not only drought, but you're experiencing a heat wave, the likes of which we're seeing here in the United States and much of Europe and Great Britain. You say it's hotter than normal where you are in Brazil now.
It's hotter than normal right now, and here again, it's hard to say what's causing it, but it's consistent with the trends. You know, 10 years ago even, we thought that the tropics would be pretty well buffered from climate change in terms of temperature rise, and that the biggest change would be in the temperate zone and its poles. But we now know from new evidence that the tropics have undergone pretty drastic climate switches over the ages, and that we might be coming into such a switch again.
And is that what made you begin your experiment back in 2002, foreseeing this might be a possibility, but I suspect things have accelerated even more rapidly than you might have expected?
Yeah, I started that experiment really wanting to know how far you could push this forest in a rapidly changing climate system before you push it off the edge. And this whole idea that about half of the forest is teetering on the edge of the minimum amount of rain you need as a rainforest to remain a rainforest. And what happens as you go over that edge is that's where some of the details get gruesome. Where we thought when we set up a large experiment to simulate a drier future that it would be the tiny trees that would die first, the little trees in the understory of the forest. But two years into this experiment, and actually in the beginning of the third year, where we're halving the amount of rain going into this forest, the very large trees of the canopy started to die. And that, of course, opens up what is usually a really dense canopy that creates moist, cool conditions near the forest floor. Suddenly it became hot inside the forest, and the agricultural fires that escape and usually don't burn the fair forest very well suddenly started burning them. So we've got this double whammy of big trees dying and forest opening up to the threat of fire.
And you say the tallest trees actually came crashing down?
Yes, it was. You walk into this plot now. We stopped the experiment actually a couple of years ago. 2 years ago, we stopped excluding rainfall, and you still go into it, and it's almost like you're in a park. There's so much light coming down into the understory. Which is another worrisome thing. A very severe drought, like we're in the midst of right now, damages the forest in such a way that stays there for years to come, because it takes such a long time to replace these large trees or for the surviving trees to fill in those gaps.
And that exposes the forest floor to the drying hot sun, of course, if the trees come down. About what percentage of your experimental area actually had trees coming down? I can only imagine how dramatic that must be to witness and to see.
In a typical year, there might be 1% of the trees die. You know, in nature, trees, the forest turn over one by one, trees dying. That number was multiplied by 6 in our forest. For some species, like a species in the laurel family called loro, every adult individual in our forest died. So as these types of droughts get more common, some tree species will probably simply disappear. Others, because they're more drought tolerant, will be able to hang on better.
Talk about double whammy, and of course the triple whammy is that trees once they're dead, I guess, release their carbon dioxide that they've been storing back into the atmosphere, which then contributes to the acceleration of global warming.
Yeah, that's something that we really haven't incorporated into the whole discussion about global warming nearly enough. In 1998, there's probably close to 2 billion tons of carbon that went into the atmosphere just from rainforest catching fire, much of that from the peat forest of Borneo. What we're finding now is that there may have been 500 million to 1 billion tons of carbon. This is about a tenth or a little bit more of worldwide carbon emissions from fossil fuels, from everything. So a tenth coming from this, just this one drought event, just from the big trees dying, okay? That's the size of this effect. There's a total amount of about 100 billion tons stored in the trees of the Amazon. And the big question now is what amount, what percentage of all that carbon is going to be transferred to the atmosphere and at what rate? If it goes very quickly, as we're afraid it might after this current event, that can speed up the rate at which warming takes over the world.
And then there's the increased risk of, as you call them, mega fires, which won't happen.
Right. Most of the fires in a typical year, a typical rain year, they stay pretty close to roads, to pastures where there's been logging. But when you get beyond that threshold that I described, where you're actually decreasing the number of leaves on the trees, and or the trees are dying from a previous drought, these fires can go for miles and miles. Once the fire moves through the forest, it kills the thin-barked trees, so you have another round of dying giant trees crashing to the floor over time, decomposing, releasing more carbon to the atmosphere as they alter the structure of the forest, making it lower and more open and even more vulnerable to fire.
Oh, just a couple minutes left. I have to ask you, what does this mean for the birds and the rich animal and plant life, even in addition to the trees? And then we have to get to, what does this mean for we humans? Why should the average listener say a little bit more than, oh, gee, that's too bad, and go on with their business? And lastly, what can we do about it? That's where we have to end. We got a couple minutes, so go ahead.
Okay. We're actually now burning large swaths of rainforests of 50 and about 100 acres each. They get at that question of what are the impacts on the forest. And reptiles, for example, snakes just really don't have a chance. Most of them can't get to a hole in time. Things like sloths, we find some of those dead turtles. Other animals do very well. The monkeys come, they're attracted to fires because it scares up insects and they can feed on those. After the fire goes through, then some animals refuse to use those forests. Others will come in, the more generalist types of mammals.
What does this mean for us, humans?
What this means for us is that we can't look at global warming and saving the rainforests of the world as separate issues. To save places like the forests of the Amazon, we've really got to change the world economy and get its dependence upon fossil fuel, reduce its dependence on fossil fuel.
In a much faster, more aggressive way than we're doing it currently, obviously.
Much, much faster, yes.
Because the effects are exponentially happening faster than we ever could have foreseen.
Right, because there's a lot of carbon tied up in these forests, and what we've seen just in the last few years is that it's much more vulnerable to being transferred to the atmosphere than we thought. Some years it could be more than worldwide fossil fuel emissions of carbon.
Okay.
So if we're worried about global warming, we've got to be worried about saving these forests.
Where can people go to find out more, Dr. Daniel Nepstead? Is there a website or if they want to do further reading?
www.whrc.org.
And we'll put that on the EcoTalk website. Go back to your really, truly important critical work, and thank you so much for taking time to talk to us today.
Thank you for the opportunity.
The best of EcoTalk on AIM America Radio.
That unfamiliar sound.
I wanted it all. Intelligence, great looks, physical strength, inner beauty, even social consciousness. Friends said that I wanted too much, but I wouldn't settle. And now, I have it all.
This woman is talking about her Renewal by Anderson replacement windows from Hall's Window Center. If it looks better, lasts longer, and outperforms the competition, it's gotta be Anderson. The only windows and doors to receive Green Seal certification for energy efficiency and environmentally friendly manufacturing. Now you too can have it all. For a limited time, get 7 Renewal by Anderson windows and 1 Anderson PermaShield patio door from Hall's Window Center for just $69.95. Left channel listeners save an extra $150. Go to HallsWindowCenter.com. Click on the green seal for your coupon. Visit Hall's Window Center today on Business Park Drive in Sacramento and now in Roseville on Roseville Parkway next to BJ's. Call 1-800-76-HALLS. Smud financing available. Some restrictions apply. Offer ends September 30th.
AM 1320 Sacramento's Left Channel invites you to the 5th Annual Voters Education and Candidates Forum 2006 at the Radisson on Saturday, October 7th from 1 p.m. to 5:30. This free event presented by the Asian Pacific Islander American Public Affairs Association is your opportunity to hear candidates running for office, including a debate between California Lieutenant Governor hopefuls John Garamendi and Tom McClintock. Also expect a lively debate on the downtown sports arena issue between supporters including Daryl Steinberg and foes like Assemblymember Dave Jones.
You can also win one of two $1,000 cash raffle prizes for taking a day off from work to vote.
Be an informed voter. Join 1,000 other interested citizens at this year's Voter Education and Candidates Forum 2006 at the Radisson on Saturday, October 7th from 1 to 5:30 p.m. More information is at APAPA.org. That address again is APAPA.org.
New rule, one dear to my heart. Lap dancing is a First Amendment right. The L.A. City Council this week banned lap dancing. What is next? Burning books? Lap dancers, or Imagineers, as I like to call them, are artists drawing you into their fantasy world, much like a skilled novelist does. If novelists had perfectly waxed bikini lines. But more importantly, lap dancers are expressing an idea called hope. The hope that someday a skinny young woman with artificial breasts and a navel piercing will want to have sex with you. And without that hope, millions of American men might just as well throw themselves into the sea.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
Eco Talk, and after that last segment, you may need a glass of wine or maybe even something stronger. Well, pour yourself a cold one, either beer, because that's the name of our next guest, or wine, that's the topic of our next segment. We're going to talk about wine we call frogs, like the stuff you drink, and we're going to hear about some tales of wine merriment and, more seriously, a deep commitment to the Earth's cycles in the face of rapidly escalating climate change. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Betsy. Thank you for having us today.
I'm amazed that somehow I leapt over frog leap eco-sensibility, because I had no idea you were so comprehensive in your approach. Was this the vision of one person, and when did it begin to happen, and where has it taken you?
Well, it's been a crazy ride, to say the least. John Williams is the founder, owner, winemaker here at Frog's Leap, and he founded Frog's Leap 25 years ago. And I would love to tell you that it was with a great sense of enlightenment that he originally started Frog's Leap down this path, but it really took about 10 years of screwing up a couple of vineyards and trying to get things going before he realized that there had to be a better way.
Now, he shouldn't feel too guilty. We just interviewed Walmart. They have a little bit more ecological impact even than frog sleep, and they're getting it. So, hey, maybe it is infectious.
And that's definitely the path that we've taken. And it's interesting that what you said to start things off was that you originally started to love frog sleep and then for just being great wine, and then started to find out about what we do. And I think that's the approach that we like to take as a company. We farm the way we do, which is 100% organically grown and without the use of irrigation in almost all of those vineyards. And we do this because it's the best way to grow great wine grapes.
Now, you are in the Napa Valley.
We are in the Napa Valley.
Where Bonterra and Fetzer really pioneered, you know, greening viticulture, I guess. So are there more and more wineries following in their lead? And where does Frog's Leap sort of stand in the lineup? And I'm just curious, really, more than any kind of judgment, because obviously you're doing a whole lot.
Right. It was about 15 years ago that John was talking to Paul Dolan about what they were doing up at Fetzer. And John was interested in organic grape growing and said, hey, can you come down and teach us about it? And Paul said, well, I don't know what I'm doing, but we've got this guy named Amigo Bob who teaches us how to farm organically. And it really was that introduction with this now world-renowned grape consultant named Amigo Bob. And he's straight out of Central Casting. He's got the long hair and the handlebar mustache, and he wears leather shorts and tie-dyed shirts, but
somebody should make a movie.
Absolutely.
That seems to be the genre lately. Who killed the electric car and Inconvenient Truth? Why not do something fun on wine?
Absolutely. And it was about 15 years ago, and directly from Fetzer and what they were doing that we started to learn about this. And really, John helped to kind of pioneer it here in the Napa Valley, and now the list is of people who are growing their grapes organically is long and distinguished, and it's starting to become the accepted truth about how to grow great wine grapes as opposed to the misconceived, you know, what can't you do approach to grape growing.
Well, it makes so much sense, especially because you're all about the land, and it's, you know, in Northern California, much of the grape grown in this country, and grapes grown for wine anyway. And, you know, it's really interesting that the alternative, you know, has been...
So it's kind of like, okay, yeah, you're working out and you're eating right and you've got a good job, but you don't have a spiritual life. Well, then maybe there's something that's missing. And biodynamic takes the farmer and the farm and puts it into a context of a greater ecological system, and that we can't think of things as individual parts. We have to think of how the farm relates to the animals that inhabit it, the people who work here, the lives that they have. Are they taken care of? Do they have health care? Do they have 401ks? Or are we doing things to try to invigorate the entire farm system? And biodynamics is a way of looking at your farm in that type of bigger picture, you might say.
Talking about alignment, and even Walmart is trying to straighten itself out.
Absolutely.
There was a recent story about climate change that could render California's wine-growing regions unsuitable for the finest grapes, and that by 2100, according to this story, the U.S. could lose 81% of our premium grape-growing land. That's even more disturbing than, well, a lot of things we've heard. It's all disturbing, but we're going to lose our wine. What's at stake for Frog's Leap and other vineyards with regard to climate change?
Everything is at stake. Everything. You know, the greatest wines in the world come from a thimble full of places that are the tucked-in little corners of the world where climate and soil, topography, people, tradition all come together to create these magical little places for creating some of the best wines in the world. And you cannot take away climate and think that you're going to be able to continue that. It's just not going to happen. So when we look at that, and we read that San Francisco Chronicle story, and we've even had some of the folks from Stanford who helped on that come to the winery and talk to us, we realize that everything is at stake.
Mm-hmm. It sure is. Evidenced by the last story about what's happening in the rainforest. It's turning into a desert in Amazon. So if that can happen, boy, could we lose our wine. Okay, let's end on a lighter note. Give us a tip for a great summer organic wine.
Well, you know, it is summertime, and as we all know, recently we've had some heat here in Northern California and all throughout California.
And the country and Europe as well, where I'm headed tomorrow, going on a bike trip in Bordeaux in a heat wave, and it's probably globally warming fueled. So silly me for thinking that would be a good idea in August.
Absolutely. Well, I
forgot my own beat.
The key word for you for the rest of your trip is rosé. Think rosé.
Well, since I'm Bessie Rosenberg, that'll be easy to remember.
Yes, absolutely. Popular in the south of France, and we make one here at Frog's Leap as just one of our neighbors, the properly farming Robert Sinsky Vineyards. Rosé is the perfect summertime wine. It's low in alcohol. It's got great aromas and flavors of strawberry, watermelon. It's easy to drink, and
it's chilled.
It's refreshing.
Chilled. So, make sure that your refrigerator is an Energy Star label refrigerator before you stock up on your rosé.
You got it.
See, it's all connected.
You bet.
Jonah Beer, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Frog's Leap Winery, they've got a great product, and I'm even more excited about it now that I know they're truly green from head to toe, and they're in the Napa Valley in pretty green, getting greener all the time, Northern California. That's our show for this week. Go out and have a great green one. Check out our website for more information.